I've got nothing. Seriously. However, I do know this. In Australia, in December, it will be pretty much the case that everybody under 16 is entirely banned from social media. And today, on LBC, you heard our terror watchdog call for exactly the same measures to be introduced here. Is it actually feasible, plausible, and perhaps most importantly of all, desirable?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Technology Secretary, Peter Kyle, has told LBC that ministers will use emergency talks to assess what Britain can do in Gaza. Sir Keir Starmer will convene a cabinet meeting this afternoon to discuss a peace and aid distribution plan. He presented the proposals to President Trump in Scotland yesterday. Mr Kyle says the UK is prepared to do whatever it takes to secure long-term peace.
The crisis in front of us that is so unprecedented and it is so horrific. It's reached terrible levels of deprivation in Gaza. And I think it is right to actually assess what Britain can do, both unilaterally by providing aid, but also multilaterally by working with our key global partners to ease the conditions today as much as possible in Gaza.
President Trump has met with Scotland's First Minister John Swinney in Aberdeenshire. The American leader's opening a second golf course at his Menny estate before returning to the US later in the afternoon. Authorities say the suspect in a shooting in New York City had travelled there from Las Vegas. Four people, including a police officer, were killed at a skyscraper in Midtown Manhattan yesterday. The motive is still unclear. China is rolling out an annual child subsidy to revive a flagging birth rate. Families will be paid 3,600 yuan, about £375 a year, for each child until they turn three. High costs of childcare and education have been blamed for putting young people off starting a family. Crowds are gathering in central London to celebrate the Lionesses' win at Euro 2025. The England players will take part in an open-top bus parade, followed by a ceremony outside Buckingham Palace. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is there.
Well, the stage is set and the crowds are really building here outside Buckingham Palace. I can hear the military band warming up at the barracks around the corner. We've had music on the speakers and England flags are being waved all the way down this iconic road, which is draped with England flags and Union Jacks, ready to welcome the Lionesses back with their silverware for this celebration today. People here have come from all over the country, with them arriving as early as 5 a.m.
In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up 22 at 91.03. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy for most parts of the country with some patchy rain developing in central and southern areas. A high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you to Bill in Barnoldswick for galloping to my rescue. Tried to throw James a lifeline here, he writes. When I heard you say nobody knows you're a dog, I don't think it means literally. I think it just means you're anonymous online and can hide who you are. I did know that, Bill, but thank you for the double head, the belt and braces from Bill in Barnoldswick. And who here can dispute the benefit of belt and braces? Here's a thing that we probably don't think about enough. The difference between being in a position of power and being in pursuit of power, or simply holding power to account, speaking truth to power, or even doing the worst bit of punditry and commentary, which is deliberately fomenting or disseminating untruths because it will make you look better or make the people you're opposed to look worse. That were the massive differences. You've seen it quite a lot with the current government. I had the pleasure, genuine pleasure, of sitting down for an hour with the Foreign Secretary last week, David Lammy. You can hear the results of that encounter on Full Disclosure this week. And I think he possibly has had one of the steepest learning curves with the questions of things that you can say in opposition that may come back to haunt you in power, or things that you can promise even in opposition. Keir Starmer also has stumbled on this ground, which, when you are actually in power, are considerably more complicated and quite possibly impossible. But in opposition, that doesn't matter because you never get really deeply scrutinised. You can make all sorts of pronouncements about money and coppers. You can essentially promise everybody a unicorn. And then when you're in power, you will discover, if you didn't know already, how difficult it will be to deliver. That's why it was a good thing, in a way, that Boris Johnson ended up carrying the can for Brexit, but obviously a bad thing that he did so in a country where none of the people in my line of work who had fallen for his nonsenses held him to account. The difference between being in power and being in pursuit of power. It really hit me today, listening to the interview that Jonathan Hall gave to Nick Ferrari, regarding what will happen, what he would like to see happen to under 16s on the internet. It's pronounced Barlick. Of course it is, not Barnoldswick. It's one of those little linguistic idiosyncrasies that makes us English. I hadn't properly registered at the time because I was reeling so completely from the horrors of the murders in Southport a year ago today. I hadn't properly registered at the time. I didn't spend much time thinking about the perpetrator, oddly, because, of course, were you to venture online, that's all anybody seemed to care about. Not actually the perpetrator, but lies about the perpetrator being spread by all the usual suspects and provoking or inciting some of the most hideous scenes we've ever seen on our streets. But what I hadn't done, and I realised, is focus on how any human, because you have to sort of, I'm afraid, resist the desire to believe that these kind of acts are undertaken by something inhuman or beyond normal or subhuman or whatever it wants to, whatever comfort, wherever you get the comfort from, the idea that it could never happen here because it is so extraordinary. It was a story, if you look at it through through that end of the telescope, through the lens of the perpetrator, the culprit, the murderer. It was a story of radicalization without ideology. It was the violence itself. So I think this is quite a helpful way to understand the relationship between terrorism and some crimes and why some crimes aren't terror. So violence is a means to an end if you're a terrorist. Violence is a way of pursuing your warped goals, whether you're trying to sow division in a society or whether you're trying to remove a portion of the population, either entirely, as in physically remove them, or just remove them from the protection and affection of the rest of society. Terrorism has an end. Or of course, look, you may want an independent homeland. You may be trying to repel colonialists and invaders, and that gets called terrorism because the colonialists and the invaders are kind of in charge of the laws and the language. But there is always an end. The violence is always a means to an end. I'm really sorry if this is obvious to you, but sometimes when it's taken me a while to work something out, I think it's possible that you've not quite clocked it either. And so the Southport was violence for violence's sake. It's this new legislation that they're looking at that would somehow work harder to recognise, because prevent, the organisation didn't really, we learned, know what to do with people who were violent for violence's sake. Their violence, their murderous ambitions were not framed in the crucible of hope, of bringing about some sort of change. They were framed in the simple crucible of violence. I want to be violent. Fascination by violence. The Southport killer, the more you read about him in the days and weeks after the murders, and particularly during and after the trial, the more you realise that this was, I mean, even more irrational than the mad acts of terror that are undertaken in the hope of achieving something. There was nothing here that anyone was hoping to achieve except terror. It wasn't terror in order to achieve something. It was just terror for the sake of terror. And that's why the independent reviewer of terrorism legislation this morning was speaking about the internet. Because what we know about, I can't say his name, I don't know whether that's because I'm a bit soppy or a bit of a snowflake, but I won't say his name. And we learned that he had lived in a kind of almost a hermetically sealed existence. Utterly fascinated by violence and enjoying zero interaction with the outside world, alienated from his own parents in his own home, and using the internet to indulge this, you need a stronger word than fascination. Well, what's the word we want? This hunger for violence, to the point where he undertook the terrible acts that he undertook in Southport a year ago today. And that's why the reviewer of terrorism legislation is thinking about and talking about the internet, because if the internet hadn't been there, or if this person hadn't had access to it, the argument becomes that he wouldn't have been able to develop this appetite, this hunger for violence that led him to actually do it. Have a little listen to what he said earlier, because there's two things going on here, I think, I hope, if I've explained myself correctly. The first is, when somebody who's actually got the reins of power, or is very close to power, says something that really makes your eyebrows rise, it's much, much more important than it is when somebody in opposition or some professional heckler does it. I think of myself, if you want, as a professional heckler. I can say anything now. Oh, they should lock them up and throw away the key. You can say that if you're a gob on a stick, or if you're an opposition politician. You can't say that if you're close to or in power, because quite rightly, you'd then be asked to deliver upon your own dreams. So this guy is close to or adjacent to power, independent reviewer of terrorism legislation. And for him to speak in these terms, I found quite, it's not the first time he said it, but it's the first time it's really registered with me. And I found it really interesting that he thinks it's feasible, plausible, and desirable. Actually, feasible and plausible kind of mean the same thing, don't they? So we'll just stick, let's not be pompous about it. Let's break the habit of a lifetime and use two words where three will do. Feasible and or desirable. And the second bit of the conversation is about the difference between violence in pursuit of an ideological goal and violence in pursuit of nothing but violence, and perhaps infamy, but not anything that could be even loosely described as ideological. So here he is talking to Nick earlier this morning.
If you want my honest answer, and I've looked at this topic for a long time now, I think that children have got to stop using social media, full stop. And I think we need to go down the line that Australia has pioneered. I mean, in my dreams, we would just have kids with dumb phones and a few apps, and that would be distributed on the NHS. And if the government was really bold, they would grasp this bull by the horns. But I'm afraid the Online Safety Act is not going to be the solution.
Define children in this context, Mr. Hall.
16.
Many would say that it's a tremendous tool for educational purposes.
Yeah, I'm sure. But we all learnt lots of things before the internet, and the harms are now absolutely apparent. I mean, I can tell you, having done over six years as the reviewer, the face of terrorism and threat has changed. And it doesn't happen because people are demonstrating in favour of some bizarre, loony, extreme right-wing, violence-fixated thing on the corner. It's not a physical thing. It's not a real-life thing. It all comes from the internet and kids becoming obsessed, getting a sense of identity and wanting to copycat. So, I mean, yep, there's going to be a little bit of a loss, but the overall benefits, I think, would be enormous.
That's really, really interesting, and I'd go so far as to say important, isn't it? What did you pick out from that? The first bit would be, yes, there will be a loss. We will actually lose something. That's utilitarianism in action. For the greater good. I watched Hot Fuzz the other night. For the greater good, you would do this. You would absorb the negativity. Because one of my throwaway lines has always been, my kids are, they need it. They need it. They couldn't go to school without, social, or without tablets. They couldn't go to school without their tablets. Because everything's on it. They wouldn't know where to be at 11 o'clock on a Thursday morning if they didn't have their smartphone with them. So he says, tough, we'll deal with that. And, you know, once you actually say it out loud, you think, yeah, it wouldn't be that difficult, would it? It wouldn't be that difficult. And then you've got, it all comes from the internet. It all comes from the internet. That's an extraordinary thing for him to say. And, of course, he has, as he said, spent 6 years studying it. It all comes from the internet. So that would include radicalization that we would file under ideological, as in terrorism, and this thing that we haven't got the right word for yet, radicalization for violence, violence for violence's sake. It all comes from the internet. It all comes from the internet. And then the third thing, so those would be the three for me, and then the third thing would be just ban it all. Get rid of all of it for under 16s. It's 10:15. You know the number, although I'll remind you in a moment. The question is pretty straightforward today, actually. But as ever on this programme, the why is more important to me than the what. So what do you think? Are you for or against the idea of doing in the United Kingdom what they're poised to do in Australia in December and literally try, because I don't think you'll ever succeed completely, to ban under 16s from social media? That is happening, as things stand, in Australia in December. Part of what the weirdos call the Anglosphere, one of our most historic allies. They speak of the same lingo. Australia, December, banning it completely. And starting from more or less the same place we would be starting from. I always like experts on the programme, people who will be able to tell me whether or not it will work or not, but if they're actually having a proper swing at it in Australia, you have to presume they've done a little bit more digging and homework than we have and decided that, yes, it's doable. But crucially, is it desirable? Do you think this should happen? 0345 6060973 is the number you need to tell me whether or not you think this is a good idea. Is the reviewer of terrorism legislation correct? Is the price we would pay for banning all under 16s from all social media small enough to justify the benefits? And crucially, I want you to tell me why. Why you like or hate or dislike this idea. All right, that's the crucial bit. 0345 6060973. Three things. It all comes from the internet. We'll get rid of it all. I like the word all. The word all is appearing a lot here. It all comes from the internet. I think that's probably true, but then how did we end up with homicidal maniacs before the internet existed? It is all under 16s being banned from all social media. And it is the idea of violence for violence's sake being something that you won't be able to feed via any other way. So who's going to talk to us? People who know that social media very nearly ruined them. Access to social media as a teenager, as a young teenager, very nearly, or in fact, actually did ruin you. 0345 6060973. Parents, teachers. Interested observers, everybody. This is society. Is it a little bit, and it's quite correct to mark the first anniversary of something as hideous as what happened in Southport, because you might say we should be marking it or remembering it every day, but it's a calendar moment. And I wonder whether the desire to believe that we can stop things like that from happening could possibly overegg a pudding, could accelerate conversations like this. We're so desperate for it to be true, even if you're the independent reviewer of terrorism legislation, we're so desperate to believe that we can stop it from happening that we end up sacrificing something quite precious upon the altar of what will ultimately prove to be unachievable. I don't know. That's enough words from me. What do you think? 0345 6060973.
LBC.
When it comes to saving water in your area, it's the little things that make a real difference. Like turning off the tap while you're brushing your teeth. taking shorter showers, and only filling the kettle with the water you need. On dry days like today, we need to think about how we can save water for the weeks ahead. Make every drop count to help save water, and you could save energy too. Search Thames Water Calculator to see what you could save.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Have you noticed the way fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because conveying your message with sound is the most effective way to communicate to the players on the pitch that they're rubbish. And this works in advertising too. You see, research shows how brands that use radio to amplify their advertising are 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
And 20 after 10 is the time. There is always that, it's a bit like Banquo's ghost, isn't it, in the Scottish play. That thing that turns up whenever we discuss this. That documentary that everybody, well, we didn't ignore it exactly. But when they made that documentary about the Silicon Valley billionaires, the guys that actually ran these platforms, and we're going back a few years now before the full extent of their insidiousness had become clear to everybody, they almost to a man and woman, although it was mostly men, revealed that they'd never let their own children anywhere near it. I wonder if we should have paid a lot more attention to that simple fact a long time ago. But it doesn't change the conversation we're having today. Independent reviewer of terrorism says, ban them all. Ban them all the under-16s from all social media. And the rest will follow. What do we think? Rich is in Rutland. Rich, you can kick things off. What would you like to say?
I'd like to say that, yes, it should be banned. I think when we were growing up, we would interact socially with each other, would do everything in front of each other, and now they're on social media and they don't do that, and they have 50 friends at the end of it, and they have all this instant gratification from that, that means that they are essentially addicted to it, and they need to socialise in front of each other. And I think the cognitive load they have through lessons, and then you add on social media and the internet, means that they have too much to think about, and I think it would be good and healthy for them not to have social media until they're a little bit older.
Is it? I mean, do you work with children, or are you just speaking?
Yeah, I'm a teacher.
You're a teacher. How plausible is it, do you think, that the conversations we have about mental health crises among the generations we're discussing this morning will have a lot more roots in what we're discussing today than conventional wisdom currently allows?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like anything, they have so much to think about, and they go on social media because they are worried about what's going on. And if they feel as if they're not in that loop, then that's the thing that makes them go back to it all the time. So yes, of course, I think anyone who has too much to think about will overthink things by its very nature, and then probably go down that.
But what about all those? So I don't think this is the rationale of Jonathan Hall. I mean, he's trying to stop processes of radicalization. He's trying to stop people being able to feed. You know, you get a tiny acorn of interest in something truly vile, whether it's extreme pornography or extreme violence. And at the moment, as things stand in this country, a 14, 15-year-old boy can indulge that acorn of interest until it is a whopping great oak tree that dominates every single aspect of their life. But you're going in much lower. You're simply saying it's terrible
time,
for kids.
At the same time, any of this stuff that was talked about, any of this stuff that is radicalisation or anything extreme or any part of the spectrum, we wouldn't allow it in the playground. So I don't see why we should allow it on social media.
No, but we wouldn't ban the playground.
No, but we wouldn't allow them to talk in that way. If we ever heard them showing each other things, like a picture of that, you know, not on their phone necessarily, yes. But you know, we wouldn't allow that stuff. So I don't see why we should go, oh, it's okay for you to do it behind closed doors in your room and share it essentially in their virtual playground, which is the way in which they socialise, or they can socialise.
What sort of things have you encountered?
Nothing too extreme. And we have had some stuff. And of course, to be fair, you know, I think a lot of the safeguarding stuff is excellent. I think there's a lot of people doing a lot of work to try and help pupils. But ultimately, they have access to stuff that makes them go down a rabbit hole. And the algorithm keeps feeding. And we all do it, even as adults. We doom scroll. We continue to go through reels and that kind of thing. And then they just get fed this thing. It's like any habit. It's those seeds of information that they probably don't need until they're a bit older, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, I hear you. And I mean, I'll leave it to other callers to remind us what we will lose or what they will lose as a consequence of this blanket ban. But as Jonathan Hall suggested, there will be negatives, but they will be dwarfed by the positives. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need. I mean, there's another element to this, which I'm very uncomfortable with. I'm certainly not suggesting it reflects my own thoughts, not least because we sat down last week with the mother of a boy who died after she believes he undertook the blackout challenge on TikTok, which has left, I think, up to 20 young people dead. And there is an argument that those children should have been better equipped by other adults with the knowledge that they needed to know that indulging in certain behaviours, even if it looks like everybody else on TikTok is doing it, has appalling consequences. It is a really, really dangerous thing to do. You ban the platform. I mean, you don't ban children from doing it in the circumstances that Rich describes, when they're doing all their interacting face-to-face and a crazy craze, a dangerous craze comes in. Or I'm going to sound about 127 years old now, but a kid at school is sniffing glue and he persuades other people to do it as well. That has nothing to do with the internet. So I don't know whether or not there is an air here of letting parents off the hook, because I'm thinking of those tech bros again. They kept their kids off it. Have we been a bit cowardly? And we're a weird generation. I give my children way more than my parents gave me. Friday sweets for my sister and I, that was it. 10p every Friday to spend on sweets. We've never had rationing like that in our house. We've always had a completely different attitude to things like treats or eating out or pocket money, much less Victorian. And feeling bad when they're upset rather than considering that to be a crucial part of parenting. Have we dropped the ball a bit here? Should we all have been a lot more robust a lot earlier on what our children could and could not access? And now we're almost farming out responsibility to authority? I mean that only as a question. Only as a question. Luke's in Newcastle. Luke, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. I'd have to disagree to an extent with your last call. I think he's got some good points. But I think it's almost too easy to focus on the negatives the smartphones and the internet brings.
Of course.
When there are so many positives. And I've got a young child. He's four. He's far too young to have a phone or even consider that.
Well, you say that. That's a parental choice.
Well, good point. But one thing I do love showing him are all these incredible videos that you do get on TikTok, on YouTube. And if you train the algorithm right and have sensible regulation, I really do think the phones could be fantastic.
Yeah, but you're over 16, I presume, Luke.
I am, yeah.
With your four-year-old boy. That was a fairly safe speculation. Not 100%, I grant you. So you're I mean, that doesn't change the proposal. This proposal would simply be he's not allowed entirely unsupervised. He's not allowed his own access to it until he's 16. It doesn't stop you from showing him stuff.
No, but I think if talks are going about, if we're following Australia and we're taking away social media and that would be like the final outcome, and it seems to be the way that the government's heading, then I think we have to sort of...
But what would you lose? I don't think you'd lose anything. You'd just have to verify your age, not your identity. There's still a lot of confusion surrounding that as well. You'd have to verify your age to access the things and then exercise your parental discretion on deciding what you are and are not going to show to your son between now and his 16th birthday, after which you kind of lose... That right? I don't know that it is quite the problem you're describing.
Well, that's a fair point. I think, as I said, though, if there is an issue with long-term banning and this the way forward, and that it does seem to be that a lot of people are very anti-phones and anti their kids.
Yes, that's true. That, I mean, you're doing the baby and the bathwater argument, really, I think, aren't you?
Okay.
And we do need to be careful about that. But I don't think... And that's why it's a really good call, because a lot of people will be thinking like you're thinking. But, you know, we are now thinking more. And we're actually, no, that wouldn't be a fact. There's nothing to stop me giving my tablet to my 5-year-old with my Peppa Pig videos. That's not under threat here. No one is going to get arrested for giving a tablet to a 5-year-old. You're simply not going to be able, as a 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15-year-old, to access it entirely independently and entirely, well, to access it at all, the social media element of it. YouTube wouldn't even count, would it, as social media, I don't think? And I don't know. The devil will be in the detail, which is why it's, in a way, a really good thing that Australia's going first, because we can watch them and see how it pans out. But I'm not at the moment under advisement, Your Honour. I'm not taking Luke's evidence when I arrive at my verdict later in the programme. It's coming up to 10:30. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. The conversation, if you're just joining us, is pretty straightforward. The reviewer of terrorism, the independent reviewer of terrorism legislation, no less, has gone all in on calling for a ban on all under 16s from all social media, because he argues that all the really bad stuff that happens to young people happens on the internet. And it's a conversation prompted by the first anniversary today of the hideous murders in Southport, which of course were a consequence in part, it has been argued, it has been explained, of online, quotes, radicalization, end quotes, but also unregulated online activity was also responsible for the Farage riots that swept the country in the aftermath, after people who do know better, not should know better, people who do know better, chose to act in an incredibly provocative and incendiary, dishonest and dangerous way. Maybe it's them that we should be banning from social media, as opposed to the kids. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
Cabinet ministers will gather this afternoon for an emergency meeting to discuss the situation in Gaza. Sir Keir Starmer will set out details of a peace and aid proposal drawn up with the leaders of France and Germany. Police in New York are working to establish a motive for a mass shooting at a skyscraper in Manhattan. 4 people, including a police officer, were killed in the attack at an office building on Park Avenue yesterday evening. And thousands of people are gathering in central London to celebrate the Lionesses' victory at the Euros. Serena Wiegmann and her team will show off their trophy during a procession along the Mall and a ceremony in front of Buckingham Palace. LBC weather, cloudy for most areas with some patchy rain in central and southern areas, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
At BP, we're not just talking strategy. We're making it happen, growing our upstream business with 6 major new projects in 2025. 4 already live, 2 more scheduled this year, expecting to add 135,000 barrels a day to peak production, helping drive long-term shareholder value. For more on our growth plans, visit bp.com/strategy at work.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Soft Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quarter Pillar Rowing Boats, Owl Displays, Meerkats, Honey Pot Bears. And 4 giant slides on the brand new Wave Runner 2. Let's plunge!
What's next, Dad?
Cannon Arena Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom Go-Karts, Trampolines, Magical Wood and Cafes.
Nutcatch Adventure Park.
The fun goes on and on and on and on.
Book now at nutcatch.com.
At Kia, we're excited to announce that the refined new Kia Sportage is available in showrooms now. Secure your test drive today to explore its advanced technology and stylish, sporty design. Order before the 30th of September to get 5.9% APR representative and £1,000 PCP finance deposit contribution. Search the new Kia Sportage to book your test drive. T's and C's apply. Kia Finance.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group, authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
This is LBC. Message James O'Brien on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 973.
33 minutes after 10. What if he's just completely wrong, though? That's the other problem with that dichotomy I described earlier between being in power or adjacent to power and being in pursuit of it or in criticism of it. You sort of presume that the people in power or adjacent to power have a better grasp of the facts. And sometimes it is precisely that better grasp of the facts that prevents them from keeping promises that they made in opposition. But what if Jonathan Hall is completely wrong? What if this doesn't all happen on the internet? What if it is an attempt to almost comfort ourselves by thinking that we can control the uncontrollable? As is often the case, my correspondent Emma has prompted a bit of a rethink during that 10:30 hiatus. It doesn't come from the internet, they write. It comes from humanity and unlimited exposure to everything humanity does to itself and each other, with zero safety net of outside community to reground the user. All is laughably not true. Jack the Ripper was deficient in 4chan. In fact, you can insert your own hideous human at this point in proceedings to remind everybody that the internet had nothing to do with the actions of the Yorkshire Ripper, never mind Jack the Ripper. It's just a big mirror, the internet, held up to humanity, and you can't change our reflection without changing ourselves. I mean, that has given me pause, but equally, if you're simply saying you can't spend your whole life looking in the mirror until you're 16 or 17, it doesn't automatically become a bad thing to ban the mirrors from those age groups, does it? Necessarily? The other bit of this conversation that's really uncomfortable, particularly for parents of my generation, parents of my age, is that we have really, really blown it. It is too late for generations of children whose parents were not properly vigilant, who were not supervising enough, who didn't pay enough attention when the tech bros told the interviewers that they wouldn't let their own children anywhere near the platforms that were making them billions of dollars. How did we do that? I don't know if today's the day to open that particular Pandora's box, but does the whole call for a ban on every under 16-year-old on every social media platform essentially pass the buck from the home to the public space, from the parent, who should really, there's no excuse anymore for not being tech savvy enough to keep on top of all of this. You just preferred it because your kids were quiet. Why would I go wading into what they're up to online? They're not biting chunks out of each other. They're not screaming. They're not lobbing fireworks through next door's letterbox. They're quiet, which makes my life easier. So I can spend my life on Facebook because my kids are spending their life in their bedrooms doing whatever it is they're doing, and I'm not going to take much interest in what they're doing because I quite like the status quo. That's ugly, right? That's not, because how many people now have just felt a little twinge of fear? Oh, my Lord, is he talking about me? Could he be talking about me? And it's not just the violence or the radicalization or the pornography. Some of the stuff on there with regard to, for example, eating disorders can be hideous as well with regard to self-harm. And of course, parents correctly earn oceans of sympathy when they find themselves on the end of a tragedy. The idea of anybody ever singling any of them out and saying, do you think you perhaps could have done more, would turn you almost immediately into some sort of troll, into some sort of internet troll. So don't say it about anybody else, just wonder about yourself. Why do I want the government to step in and do this? Because deep down I know I should have done. Is that a thing, do you think? 0345 6060973. Neil's in Western Superman. Neil, what would you like to say?
Hi there. I work in, I'm both a father and I also work with the profile of young people that, you know, come under this, that are fascinated with violence, you know, okay, that have been called incels and things like that.
Yes.
And I have been doing that for quite a long time.
Or trying to de-radicalise them, or... or just studying.
Yeah, in a sense, it's engaging with them.
Yes, okay.
You know, and quintessentially, I mean, we've been through this as a society before, you know, whether it was, you know, the panic satanic, whether it was, you know, whether it was the you know, during the 80s, there was a fascination with cars being stolen. And
yeah, it never felt as if it was already in everybody's pocket. The history of moral panics is well written and fascinating, and everyone like me in the middle of a moral panic always says no, this one's different from all the ones that went before, but
yeah,
but I think it might
what,
be
what you What my point yes, being is that we've been through this before, and what we always end up doing is we look at the outcomes rather than actually looking at the causes. We do that because we're looking for simplified answers for a complicated question. And what's quintessential is that in order to engage young people, we need to go into their world, not expect them to come into ours.
What I was saying just before about parents sort of staying in their silo and being almost relieved that their children are stuck in their silo over there and we know nothing about it, because that kind of suits us.
Yeah. And I get it. You know, there are times where I want to give my son, you know, he's 5, tablet and things like that. And there are times where I'm doing that where, you know, I'm overstimulated as a parent. And I do get that. We are all there. And if we don't say we're there, we're not being honest with each other.
Mm.
But we need to engage it. I mean, we engage in both social media as well as computer games, Dungeons and Dragons, all these sort of things is a way of actually engaging with young people, bringing them into our world, in order to bring them out of their world, bringing them into our world, because you need to build that relationship with them.
Is it either or? I mean, what would be, why not do all of that, but also ban under 16s from all social media?
I don't think you should ban people from under 16 because, blanket policies rarely ever work in that regard.
Smoking ban?
Seatbelt,
safety belts in cars. They're both blankets.
The smoking ban was done over generational. You could see that actually it was done as a gradual thing. It wasn't done as a kind of sort of knee-jerk reaction where. Yeah, okay. if you look at the way that
knee-jerk reaction. It's been several years since I watched that documentary. I wish I could remember the name of it. Someone will remind me imminently, where all the Silicon Valley CEOs were explaining that they'd never let their own children anywhere near the technologies that they were sending out into the world. That was quite a long time ago.
Yeah, I would compare this more to the likes of drugs, alcohol, and things like that. If you take social media away from under 16s,
yes.
Rather than actually giving them somewhere where they can, in fact, engage safely in social media, then all you do is you de-skill them. So they get to 16, and then the world becomes very vulnerable, and they're not skilled in what they do, and that's why. I mean, this is both a governmental responsibility as well as a parental responsibility.
That's a really good point. I mean, it'd be an extraordinary moment for 60 on your 16th birthday to suddenly find yourself wading through everything overnight. Yeah. You've gone from 0 to 100% access. I hadn't thought of that. That could be quite overwhelming. I think it's called The Social Dilemma, the film that I was referring to.
Yeah, I know the film. The if you look at most parents who have not fully engaged in social media, or they stick to Facebook, etc., rather than actually having a look at what younger people is, it's because they've been de-skilled, because they've not necessarily skilled themselves with it. So it's no different.
Well, this is really very thought-provoking. Pick you up on one thing when you talked about drugs, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, they are prohibited, and there are some and alcohol is very much something that you can go from 0% access to 100% access on the morning of your 18th birthday.
That's a different conversation. But the actual reality for young people, it isn't a zero thing. That the legality and the actual reality for young people, I mean, that's comparable.
Right. If you look, I bet you're good at your job now.
The reality, maybe.
No, I bet you are, because I mean, you're opening up so many lines of thought that I hadn't even spotted, let alone explored, and it does lead to the fear, which I expressed just before I took your call, that the actual independent reviewer of terrorism might have got this a little bit backwards, got this a little bit or very wrong indeed.
Yeah. The uncomfortable thing that we have to realise is that, as you pointed out with Jack the Ripper and things, there is always going to be, we're never going to be able to catch everyone. That's the very nature. That's uncomfortable to feel, but what you're trying to do is maximise, you know, rather than actually go with the minority.
Yeah, no, beautifully put and powerfully put as well. I didn't think this was going to be a pendulum hour. I thought it was actually the beginning of the end of the debate. They're doing it in Australia, and someone as august as the independent reviewer of terrorism is calling for it here. in the context of the first anniversary of the Southport murders, and the idea that you can cut yourself off from society and turn yourself into a homicidal monster online, that all felt like the beginnings of the end of the debate. But you can pick off all of those, up to and including the existence of homicidal monsters long before the internet was even thought of or even dreamt of. Good Lord. Thank you, Neil. Nigel is in Doncaster. Nigel, what would you like to say? We may never know. Nigel, are you there?
Hi, I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
Right, yeah, well, let's say that. I think with all due respect to people talking on the phone, especially your previous caller,
yeah,
there's a little bit of naivety about the internet. You take, I think they're talking about social media and 13-year-olds.
Under 16s, all under 16s.
Yeah. Well, previously just trying to talk 13 of the introduction last week. But 16 is a minimum age. You don't take a child and let them do something and say, oh, well, you've experienced it, so you're going to be okay. You don't let a child play with matches until you think, well, they're going to be safe with matches. And you can't monitor what children do. You do something and they're going to try and get around it. But that doesn't mean to say you don't say, oh, well, a child will get hold of matches and a lighter, so we can't ban them. You can restrict a lot of it. You're going to get some children which will do it.
I don't think I'm going to argue with that. But I wonder if the conversation's moved on a bit since you rang in, because of the last caller. We're not even discussing the feasibility of it or the desirability of it in the sense of what it would actually do. We're wondering whether it's actually a bit of a category error, whether the problem is nowhere near to being what we have all persuaded ourselves that it is.
But it's bigger than we're talking about counter-terrorism and
I don't know how valuable a contribution to the conversation this is, but for example, the IRA were a pre-internet phenomenon, and the carnage that they
agreed
on both sides of the Irish Sea was intense.
But how many 14-year-olds were blowing people up in Ireland?
Well, they were getting involved in other activities at a young age, and I can't think of any 14-year-olds who've been blowing people up on as a consequence of the internet. I could be wrong. You've got school shootings that were happening long before the internet happened. I'm just very cautiously nibbling at the edges of the idea that we are attributing to the internet things that have very little to do with the internet.
It's not the internet, it's social media.
Yeah, okay, social media. We had school shootings long before there was social media. We had terrorism long before there was social media. We had suicide bombings long before there was social media. There wasn't social media when the monsters responsible for the September the 11th attacks flew aeroplanes into the side of the World Trade Center. None of that is a consequence of unfettered access to social media for anyone, let alone under 16s. So
I agree.
The longer the conversation goes on, the more I worry that we're grasping for something that is not the answer to our problems.
If you have, say, a product.
Yeah.
And it causes an issue with, well, let's say it causes people to go out and kill other people. Right.
Some people. One person.
One person. But that same product also causes people to go on crazy stunts. That same product also causes people to go down rabbit holes with conspiracy theories.
It also provides desperately lonely people with the only social life that they would have.
But that's
what it provides contact with people who have shared interests and enthusiasms that are 100% healthy. It provides a window onto other worlds that you wouldn't otherwise see in the course of your daily life. For every negative, there's a positive.
But there you're talking about people who can make the distinctions between what's real and what's just on the Facebook.
Adults can't do that. Look at the anti-vax movement. Look at the conspiracy theories that have really moved pretty much into the mainstream now in this country.
But then you're saying, okay, anti-vax conspiracy theories are rife on the internet, but should we protect children from that until they've possibly got critical thinking? I'm not saying it's going to fix it, but it's surely to limit.
We need to know how much of it was caused. I think, oddly, you've reminded me of this, Nigel. I wonder whether the argument is more powerful in the context of mental health than it is in the context of very rare and hideous acts of violence. I think I would be more comfortable arguing on the mental health front that this constant barrage, we've talked about it a lot on the programme, the things that perhaps we don't know what it would be like to grow up with because of our own ages, that that must be linked to the mental health crisis that the country, that the younger generation is suffering more acutely than any other generation. And that would be a reason for removal from social media. But then my other objections would kick back in again, most obviously loneliness. Most obviously loneliness. But I wonder whether the mental health rationale for doing this is much stronger than the violent acts of terror or the terrible acts of violence rationale. I thank you, Nigel. 10:48 is the time.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
A lot of people do feel there is an atomizing going on. There are different cultures rubbing along together in this country, which is absolutely fine, but never the twain shall meet. There is no shared national identity. That's the problem.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on your radio, on Global Player, and the new LBC app.
Do you like the sound of work that has plenty of giggles? Where you'll build lifelong skills, as well as wobbly towers. Where you'll feel part of a team, or even have the chance to lead one. Where every little thing you do makes a big difference.
Superstar, you did it!
Do something big. Work with small children. Search Early Years Careers to find out more.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. Bored off to get drinks on my own.
It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Ah, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of us.
Download the Thameslink Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thameslink Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
Save this summer with Lidl. Our mini mix has something for everyone. With a pack of 12 Bon Gelati ice creams down to just £2.45 with Lidl Plus. That's how you master a meltdown. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/lbtv. Offer ends 30th of July.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC.
10:51. Sometimes I really thank you for making me see nuance and come to a deeper understanding of issues, including issues that I might have started off thinking were quite simple. Sometimes I really don't thank you for it because I quite craved a bit more certainty, a bit more solidity. And I thought I'd got that solidity on this one, but I'm not so sure anymore. Nigel said something fascinating. What if we think of social media as a malfunctioning product? So remove it from the realms of free speech, where it shouldn't be anyway. You know, if you're free to say something on social media that actually breaks the law of the land in which you wrote it, then something has gone hideously wrong. You can end up in prison and your post hasn't even been taken down. Think of it as a malfunctioning product. Farage wanging on about freedom of speech today while simultaneously demanding that a government minister apologise for being mean about him, which, you know, you can see the hypocrisy there from space. So it's not a free speech thing to say to these companies, you have to do a better job of stopping violence and lies from being fermented and spread. But taking the children out of that environment, taking the under-16s out of that environment, addresses neither. It doesn't address the, to my mind, inflated and largely nonsensical concerns about social media, or free speech, rather, and it doesn't properly address the idea of a malfunctioning product. That's the thing. That I think is the thing. In the United States of America, there's a lawsuit happening at the moment. Section 230, and I'll tell you what I will give. Do you remember when you used to get a lollipop at the Little Chef if you finished your meal? Do you remember that? I'm thinking of introducing that on the program. For my favourite callers, I might get some branded lollipops sent out for my favourite caller of the day. If you knew this already, you'd be in danger of winning a lollipop. Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, federal law, sort of provided an immunity blanket for social media because it absolves them of legal responsibility. This is what the likes of Musk and Vance are terrified of when they talk twaddle about free speech. They are not responsible for the content that is posted to their sites and then amplified by their algorithms, and the consequences don't matter. There's a lawyer called Matthew Bergman trying to sidestep these protections by using old-fashioned products liability. This really jumped into my head when Nigel talked about products. It's a malfunctioning product. Puts it under tort law, if you're interested in such things. So the argument becomes that the harms experienced by users are not a consequence of the content posted by other users or third parties, but they are a consequence of the design of the platform itself. So social media becomes a malfunctioning product. It becomes a flawed business model, and as such, something that the authorities are required to address. I wonder whether they can smell that on the horizon. I wonder whether the comments of people like Musk, and particularly Vance, about free speech are actually informed by this unfolding lawsuit. They're terrified of putting response, because politicians benefit from the lies. You don't need me to name the ones that do, but up to and including the man who lies about winning an election that he lost when he's not cheating at golf. They benefit from it, but of course the platforms, if they were required to remove it, would lose a ton of money. If they were required to actually stop promoting harmful experiences for their own users, to stop promoting, if you want to bring it down to simpler legislation, lies, they'd lose a ton of money. So politicians that benefit from lies protect the platform providers who profit. Politicians benefit from the lies in terms of power, not necessarily money, but they then protect the platforms that benefit from the horror that you can find online. And forget about lies, because that brings it down to politics, the kind of material that was being accessed by the Southport killer. They have no responsibility for it, they say. But in what other circumstances would the person who brought that into your home not be responsible for it arriving in your home or in your child's satchel, as opposed to screen? Oliver is in Swindon. Oliver, what would you like to say?
Oh, hi, James. Oh. You've had some really insightful commentary on your show today, and I'm really grateful for the things people have said. I think one of the things that is being missed here is the technical challenge that this process faces.
Yeah.
And I don't think people grasp that the counter-terrorism argument has shot itself in the foot with this. Because what will happen is scenarios previously where these children were visiting things in the open and could be tracked are now being obfuscated through things like VPNs and other programs such as this that will be offered by states such as China, Russia. And our children will be rooted through these because the UK government doesn't control the internet. It controls some of the internet, but it's a worldwide platform, and it's designed to circumnavigate state control. It's intrinsic in the internet design. So I think they've really shot themselves in the foot with this, and they're going to root children through bad actors.
I suppose it depends upon the point of radicalization, or it depends on where the pivot points are. Because if you have a mild interest, or you stumble across something hideous, it's not the next day that you immerse yourself in the worst excesses of that hideousness. And you will be prevented from doing both of those things under this legislation. But if you are already determined to immerse yourself in hideousness, then you could go down the path that you describe, and you will do so less likely to be spotted or identified than you would have been previously. So can't both those things be true at the same time?
It's worse than that, James, because once that child or adult, because adults are doing the same thing under the online safety bill, they can't afford their own products, their own VPN solutions. So they're using free products provided by the likes of Russia, China, Syria, and so on. They are putting all of their unencrypted information through those pipelines. That could be passwords, usernames, information about their personal life, alcoholism, pornography, all these kinds of things that could be used to control them and manipulate them. These are all being routed through actors who do not have our state interest at heart. It's an absolute technical own goal. It's a ridiculous oversight on the part of the counterintelligence program, but also just programs in general. And we've done this to ourselves.
You're the walking proof of what I just said about not always being grateful to people for making me appreciate the elements of an issue that I haven't spotted before. Are you professionally involved in this world?
I was there at the start of the internet, James. I'm old enough to remember that when a penny bought you a very nice sweet. So, you know, I've been there since dial-up.
Yeah, but that doesn't really answer my question. Well, I mean, you have a much deeper interest in these matters than the average Joe.
Yes, I provide education and security services to companies for decades. But the key point here is, James, his heart is in the right place. He's got a job to do. He's supposed to protect the country against terrorism.
Yeah.
But he's just taking something that we had a chance of seeing a child doing in the open, and he's just made it completely invisible to us. But worse than that, he's done it via a state actor who now has that information and can have an opportunity to influence that child's life.
And you know, my counter here would be that we're talking about a vanishingly small number of vulnerable people, but then we're back in Southport. It's a vanishingly small number of vulnerable people that end up doing truly hideous things.
Yes, it's extremism because it's extreme, James. It's at the very end of the spectrum.
Precisely.
Right? It's a tiny minority of individuals, but in the crossfire, you've got millions of innocent users. Somebody who has an alcohol problem, the day before the Online Safety Act, they could have gone online, they could have got help. Now they have to verify who they are.
They only have to verify their age.
Yes, James, and that involves stuff like passports or visual recognition, your name,
But that can only end up in somebody else's hands if you're using a VPN, no?
Yes, but what when that organisation is not in our interest? What if that service is being provided by say, China or Syria or Iran, because they can't afford the £8 a month to pay for the VPN, nor do they want to, because yesterday it worked and now it doesn't. And these companies are specialists in making these really attractive to not only adults, but children. Children's even more trivial to say, look at our fluffy application, you click it once, and we'll just take care of it for you. And now they're routing all of their most sensitive information through these states. I cannot believe this got through the intelligence services oversight.
I'm not wanting to offend you. I can't believe you're right, because it did. Do you see what I mean?
Well, I get it, James, but I'm sure you can get 1,000 people to call you and confirm it on a technical level.
I promise I am right.
This is completely correct.
Briefly, why else have virtual private networks, which is what VPN stands for? It allows you to disguise your location online. You can use the internet as though you were in another country, for people who don't know. Why? What are the other reasons why that has seen an almost 2,000% spike in downloads since Monday morning?
James, I'm going to very carefully choose my wording, and it's a word I've heard you use on the program, so I'll repeat it. The obvious one is pornography.
Yes.
And that's just a fact. But people had previously used it for things like streaming services, where they wanted to watch a program that is available in them, not their own, and so on and so on. But this really misses the point. Many people will not pay the money for those services.
To get the services. So what you're worried about is the person say, hey, look at this, it's free. And if it looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true. But by the time you realise that, it's too late. What an extraordinary call, topping off an extraordinary hour. Whew. Thank you, Oliver. I think we may need to keep him on in our... Do we have a Rolodex still in the studio? Can we keep Oliver in the Rolodex? He seems to know rather more about this than some of the people that are paid to pontificate on the subject. It's 11:02.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, thousands of people are gathering in central London to celebrate the Lionesses Euros win. They are set to take part in an open-top bus parade, followed by a ceremony outside Buckingham Palace. LBC's David Dom is there.
The England shirts are lining the streets, thousands with the name of their favourite lioness on the back, as fans have been gathering along the Mall for their chance to celebrate more lionesses' history with their heroes. Some have been here since early this morning.
Even just one European Championship, but two back-to-back, is just incredible.
It means everything for England, like winning the Euros in 22, it changed the game. More people came into the stadiums watching the matches, and I think it's just going to get bigger from here.
I was shocked, I was buzzing, I think I was every emotion under the sun.
Well, the team will soon be making their way along the Mall, heading towards the stage, and they'll enter alongside the trophy that yet again shows that they are the European champions. David Dom, LBC, Buckingham Palace.
A UN-backed monitor has warned a worst-case scenario of famine is now unfolding in Gaza. Sir Keir Starmer is due to discuss the situation and Britain's next steps at an emergency cabinet meeting this afternoon. Israel's rejected claims it's responsible for food shortages. It's understood Scotland's First Minister, John Swinney, raised the crisis in Gaza with President Trump this morning. The pair held talks in Aberdeenshire ahead of the opening of Mr. Trump's new golf course. Police are yet to establish a motive for a mass shooting at a skyscraper in New York City. Four people, including a police officer, were killed inside an office building in Manhattan yesterday evening. The suspect, a 27-year-old man, is also dead. Patrick Hendry is president of the Police Benevolent Association.
We're hurting for our brother police officer who we lost. We're hurting for that family. We're hurting for all the victims and hurting for all the families of the victims. And we're all asking why.
Fans will be able to pay their final respects to Ozzy Osbourne in Birmingham. A hearse will make its way through the city from 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. The Black Sabbath frontman died last week at the age of 76. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was at 90.95. That's up 13. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather quite cloudy for most, but feeling humid with patchy rain in central and southern areas. A high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It's 5 minutes after 11, and we're staying in similar territory now. It's another story prompted by the commemoration today of the victims of the Southport murders that took place one year ago. It's from a slightly different angle, though. It's looking more at what happened afterwards when the internet, of course, that's what we talked about in the last hour, allowed very bad actors, in one or two cases, literally very bad actors, but of course the phrase means people acting badly more than people who were bad at acting, to spread all sorts of lies and hideously dangerous provocations and incitements that caused in part, but by no means entirely, the outbreaks of murderous racist violence that we saw on so many of our streets. The word pogrom being entirely appropriate. I was so wary of using it last year, I'd looked it up. Just to be entirely clear about precisely what it meant, but that idea of targeting people within your own community because of their identity and trying to burn them to death is something that I perhaps naively thought was consigned to the history books in continental Europe, or rather in Europe, including us, you know, non-continental Europe. Naively, I said, don't at me, don't haul me over the coals for that. Very foolish and idealistic of me, of course. And the use of the word tinderbox now by the Institute of Public Policy Research a lot more responsibly than by right-wing journalists who, as I mentioned to you yesterday, now it's getting impossible to ignore the fact that some of them are praying for trouble. And you know that some politicians, some political figures need it in order to stay relevant, the ones that sell fear. In fact, I think, didn't we find some footage of one of them actually explaining that he sells fear, that that's what his job is to do? I meant to play that to you. I'll see if I can dig it out of the archive. We haven't really got an archive. But the idea that the some right-wing media, desperate now, desperate for rights. You can almost hear the relish in their voices sometimes. You can see it on the page, dripping with desire for the worst kind of violence to be visited upon our communities and streets. And you can only really say one thing about them with absolute certainty. It won't be happening on their streets. It won't be happening anywhere near them. Of that you can be certain. The behaviour that they are coming perilously close to calling for will be confined to parts of the country that they've never even visited, let alone lived in. But it doesn't make it in any way inappropriate to wonder why the violence happened. And I want to make that absolutely clear, that this is a conversation about the root causes of the hideous violence, the far-right violence that we saw. If you live in a town where somebody in a building has been charged with sexually assaulting a young woman, and you want to make your unhappiness about his presence in that building felt, you are not far right. If you start to persuade everybody else in the crowd that everybody in the building is a problem or a threat or a sex offender, or that the massive majority of them are, then you are beginning to move into far-right territory. But there was one mother last week, one of the leaders of the protest in Epping, shouting through her loudhailer, "Epping, you are better than this." And that, to me, was the perfect dichotomy between the people who, I mean, whether or not it's a productive way to behave, doesn't matter. The people who were behaving decently, and the people that Suella Braverman either pretended not to know existed or somehow managed to miss while agreeing to appear on this radio station to discuss the issues, on the other side of the fence, that distinction being absolutely crucial. So the IPPR has done research into the why of it, not the what of it, but the why of it, and it's probably confession time for me. I don't know how much of the program, and I don't know how much attention you pay, and I don't know how much of the coverage we've given to problems among young people. It used to be knife crime. Isn't there's a thought. Isn't it odd how conversations about knife crime have a very different feel in the mouths of most media to conversations about far-right violence? But when we talk about knife crime, I have been very, very guilty in the past of poo-pooing some of your suggestions. You will say to me that the kids need something else to do. And listen, I've been doing this for 20 years now, and I think uncommonly for this line of work, I've mellowed during that time. I've moved away from positions of authoritarianism. I used to be very much in favour of the idea of more stick and less carrot, for example, with young people. I don't know why. Well, I do kind of know why, but I won't bore you with the details. I've written a book that I can bore you with instead on this subject. And I used to dismiss, because I don't know why. I sort of think, I've never quite went down the tabloid path of blaming it all on the parents. Or certainly never went near the tabloid path of pretending to believe that criminality was somehow linked to ethnicity. But I did used to think that it was a bit of a cop-out to say, for example, we need more youth clubs. In fact, you may have even heard me, yeah, whatever, we've heard that a million times before, and kids are still stabbing each other, so let's stop talking about youth clubs now. I think that was a huge mistake. I'm not entirely sure why I did it. I think it was because I sometimes develop a little bit of an allergy to repetition. I can get a little bit bothered, bogged down by the thought someone's already said that. Somebody's already issued this claim, and that used to annoy me. It doesn't annoy me anymore, probably because I've been doing it for so long. Imagine if I was going to limit every contribution to this program to one that had not been made before. But I just used to think it was a bit too pat to talk about youth clubs. And now the IPPR has looked into the creation of an environment in which the far right could riot in Southport. And what you may find a little tricky about this is that it almost paints a sympathetic picture, in that the people that we saw trying to set fire to buildings containing human beings, they're not quite portrayed as victims, but it's in all our interests to understand how somebody could end up in that, in a moment like that. And the death of community, often, of course, blamed on immigration, could be much, much simpler. Pubs, parks, and even piers closing at a rate of knots. This pushes people into isolation. It means they spend more time online, and because of some of the issues we were discussing in the last hour, the susceptibility to far-right propaganda increases. There's even talk now of an Amazon tax, where they'd take more money from the big companies, the big online tech platforms, to create a welfare fund that would rebuild shared spaces and resist the far right. Now, I think there is another anniversary today. I could be wrong. I may have got the date slightly wrong. But I think today is the same day of the year upon which Oswald Mosley arrived in Liverpool to try and spread his fascist poison. I could be wrong. I can't remember quite where I've got this thought from. But he was roundly dismissed. He was sent packing just as he was on Cable Street in the East End of London. And I've often wondered why a community could come together in that way, in a way that it doesn't feel like it would now. If the fascists started marching through Liverpool or Cable Street these days, they'd probably get a front row seat on television programmes and their toes tickled by various newspaper columnists and radio presenters. I just don't think that the community would resist it in the way that it did back then. And I think these things might be linked. So not only do I feel really stupid for dismissing arguments about community spaces, about shared community spaces, creating much healthier environments for everybody living in those areas, whether they used the spaces or not. But I think that it actually, Manchester it was, I think, Manchester perhaps, not Liverpool. I think it probably explains why communities were able to unite in defence of decency instead of creating what we saw in Southport and tiny, tiny elements of a community uniting in pursuit of racist violence. So I that's a fairly pompous introduction to a really simple question, but you're used to that by now. I just want you to tell me. I don't want to be rude. I don't want to say, can we guard against too much sort of rose-tinted blue rinse retrospection? Because that would be rude. And that actually would be unhelpful as well. Because how many of us can honestly say what difference it makes to have community spaces? Well, how many people in this country today do you think are, for example, members of a social club? It's about 1 in 40. That's a tiny proportion. And that will include everything from the sort of British Legion right through to the Rotarians. Anything at all. There's one just round the corner from my house. My wife's granddad used to be a member of the British Legion, and you'd go down there and cheap beer, bit of line dancing. And I used to think it was a little bit daft. I loved it, but I thought it was a bit silly. And I thought, oh, here you go. This is nice. We're watching something expire. We're watching the last days of something that has become increasingly irrelevant. And yet, for the first time ever, as I read this report by the IPPR, I found myself thinking, well, what if it was really important and valuable and we should never have allowed it to be lost? What if it's true? What if these things are obvious and a bit simple and incredibly important and very, very true? Why have communities become susceptible to far-right thuggery? Answer, because the sense of community has gone. They pick on pubs, piers and parks. They clearly share my affection for alliteration because they go even further. They say pubs, piers and parks are pushing people into isolation, the closure thereof. And I don't know that we have a debate about this, do we? Community halls, youth clubs, privatisation of public spaces. It just means we're spending more and more time alone and online, and those are precisely the circumstances in which far-right extremism can flourish. I don't think we can even have a debate about it, can we? It's so obviously true. The more I talk about it, the more I learn about it, the more I read about it, the more obviously true it becomes. It must be relevant. And I guess, you know, it's tempting to say, there's no community cohesion anymore because of all the new arrivals. But where are they supposed to commune? Where are we supposed to cohere with each other? Where are we supposed to go? You hear old people talk about how they met at a dance. Do you remember that? I know we can go nightclubbing and things, but these would be community organised events. Soldiers, new arrivals, you'd meet at a dance. Oh, man. Either this is really important and we're going to have a great chat about it, or I am ageing at a rate that makes me more susceptible now to rose-tinted... No, it's not that. It's just true, isn't it? And anyway, it's a detailed report by a proper think tank, not one of those weird ones that won't tell you who funds them. So, I'm not talking about Morris dancing, no, but I appreciate that's what I'm worried that it might sound like, Seamus. I'm talking about places where communities can come together. And I want you to tell me, very, very simply, I want you to tell me what they were like. 0345 6060 973. How significant do you think the closure of community spaces is to the collapse of community spirit? And look, be honest with me. You're surprised by this, right? And yet it's right there in front of us. How big a part do you think the closure of community spaces has played in the sense, the very widespread sense of community spirit diminishing? And in that vacuum where community spirit used to be, far-right extremism can flourish. Hit the numbers now, you will get through. 0345 6060 973. So what difference, here's a question, and let's keep it nice and friendly and warm and kind. What difference did community spaces make to your life? However old you are, because some young people, thank God, are still getting access to some youth services and some volunteer groups and some youth clubs. But I just want you to talk to me about the difference that these community spaces make or made to your life. And as a special prize, there's even perhaps a lollipop for someone who can talk to me about peers, as in P-I-E-R-S. Pubs and parks, obviously. How many pubs? 50 a week now. Every month, 50 pubs are closing. 600 youth clubs shut between 2012 and 2016. 10 local authority-run community spaces shut every year in London alone between 2018 and 2023. What difference did they make? And how persuaded are we by the idea that this is actually a major reason for far-right extremism? 20 minutes after 11 is the time. 0345 6060 973 is the number you need.
This is LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Societies Rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
It's huge, this, isn't it? The more you think about it, the more you sort of realise. Because even Starmer's hideous Island of Strangers speech, if you are subscribing to the idea that we're becoming an island of strangers, where do you go to break down those barriers? Where, literally, where do you go? Where do you go? To meet people who you don't already know. To meet people whose backgrounds might be a little bit different from yours. To meet people who you don't have much in common with immediately, but the more you get to know each other, the more you realise that you do. I can't believe that this is something that isn't discussed more. I know why it's not discussed more, because it's not really blaming anyone. I suppose we could blame the Tories, blame Margaret Thatcher. Someone will remind me of her old line about there being no such thing as society, which isn't an entirely fair representation of an interview that she gave, I think, to Woman's Own. But how can we not be more fragmented and more fractured if there's nowhere to go to be more connected and together? So what was it like? How would you persuade a sceptic listening to this that actually sometimes it really is as simple as the predictable contributions to radio phone-in programmes make it sound? It could be something as simple as a youth club, a leisure centre, a pub, and not so much for children, or, and they're really going in hard on this at the IPPR, a pier, as in a seaside pier. Park run, is that a thing? Park run's huge, right? And are you making friends at Park Run? Are you meeting, you're chatting a little bit to people that you would... So do you see what I mean? This is the kind of thing government can do. And they're not. But what we need to do is work out how big a deal it is, how big a difference it makes to life for everybody. 11:24 is the time. Luke's in Coventry. Luke, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. So when I was in secondary school, and primary school, we had social clubs that we went to. So when I was in primary school, we literally had a leisure centre that I went to and had loads of different games and sports and stuff. And then in secondary school, when I moved, we basically had a sort of social club that we'd all go to.
After school? This is in addition to school. So you're just school age and go on.
Yeah, so basically we had... it was called The Rock. It was literally just a social club that me and friends and other people in the school would go to after school, usually on a Wednesday, like once a week. And it was a volunteer-run sort of place.
They
just stopped getting the funding for it, so they had to close it. But it was a place where I had old-school game consoles, like GameCubes and stuff like that, where we could all play together. They had computers, so people had access to computers who wouldn't have them at home. Had, like, a DJ section, a table tennis table, everything sort of... all in one, and then we'd also be able to go outside and have a kickabout and...
I wonder why we... I've got a horrible feeling that, you know, if a leaflet came through my door 10, 20 years ago about how we all have to work to keep this facility open, I wouldn't have even registered it, mate.
No, most people wouldn't.
Why? No. Why is that, do you think?
I think it's a case of, because they don't see the benefit of it, they won't do it, but people who have kids who go to them, they'll see the benefit because they see that their kids are going out socialising and stuff like that, whereas now people won't see the benefit because they won't see their kids going out and doing those things.
You can't, you don't know what you've got till it's gone almost.
No, especially when it was stuff like that, because once that closed down, we all just started going on our computers and consoles at home, so then we'd all play online, but we weren't actually seeing each other or getting exercise.
Which brings us back to the last hour of the conversation. I mean, I knew they were linked, but I hadn't spotted that direct link. I hope this doesn't apply to you or your friends, but it is easy to see how that sense of isolation for some people will make people more susceptible to online radicalisation. Or to respond to some half-wit on Twitter saying, let's all go out and burn down a hotel.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, is because you're already on the internet, it's easy to get lost in it. Like, when people are on TikTok, where you can literally see anything, you'll be bombarded with it constantly, and then you're just going to slowly go into it. That's why Andrew Tate got so big, because you see it all the time, you get bombarded with it, and if it's the only viewpoint you're hearing, that's all you're going to think of.
And we're back to the algorithm very deliberately creating that scenario, and the concept of a malfunctioning product rather than a platform where free speech is exercised. Good Lord. Had you realised before this morning that the... because obviously this is your personal experience of the... had you realised the potential size of the hole that these sort of things have left in our society?
So I had basically... mainly just because me and my fiancé went to where I used to live, and then I told her about the old social club that I used to go to when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it just sort of reminded me that we spent so much time, we literally went there every single week, and then when that closed down, we then started going to play football every now and again, but then that stopped.
And everybody, and you, how old are you?
I'm 27.
So this, I mean, you could have been the last sort of vanguard of that kind of community experience, and people older than you would have had even more experience of it, and people younger than you would have had less to none. And it meant you knew everybody. I mean, you knew people's names, even people that you didn't go to school with, and you, they're just, and whether you were best mates or not, that knowledge, that consciousness of each other creates something that it sounds pretty close to community.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, luckily, after that, after I left secondary school, I sort of lost contact with my friends, and then I started doing musical theatre, which is just a fantastic sort of thing to get into.
I love you, Luke. I love you like a brother, mate. Musical theatre. If everyone did musical theatre, there'd be no violence.
Yeah, generally.
Let alone race.
It'll be a lot cattier, but yeah, it'd be a lot less violence.
There'd be no violence at all, let alone no race riots. And that's it. I mean, you pick on something. The biggest formative experience of my life was not public school. In terms of the positives, it was youth theatre. It was acting. That's where I met people from all sorts of backgrounds, including backgrounds profoundly, I mean, completely different from mine. Some kids were there on local authority bursaries because they were from such underprivileged backgrounds. And they approached me like an exotic creature. And then by the end of 6 weeks, in some cases, lifelong friendships had been forged, despite the fact that in normal circumstances, you never would have met each other. And those places don't seem to exist anymore, and we haven't talked about it before on this programme. And if we have, we've poo-pooed it and passed over it because we're looking for a much heavier explanation as to why societies are fracturing or young people are stabbing each other or other people are being seduced by far-right lies online to the point where they'll go and try to set fire to hotels. So what difference did it make to you to have access to a public community space? 0345 6060 973. I've got another example for you, actually, that Dale Vince has come up with. Great bloke, Dale Vince, in all sorts of ways, but looking at how football tickets could be made available on prescription. I'll share more details with you after the very latest news headlines with Thomas Watts.
The Technology Secretary, Peter Kyles, told LBC that ministers will use emergency talks to assess what Britain can do in Gaza. Keir Starmer will convene a cabinet meeting this afternoon to discuss a peace and aid plan. Authorities say the suspect in a shooting in New York City had travelled there from Las Vegas. Four people, including a police officer, were killed at a skyscraper in Midtown Manhattan yesterday evening. And crowds are gathering in central London to celebrate the Lionesses' win at Euro 2025. The England players will take part in an open-top bus parade, followed by a ceremony outside Buckingham Palace. LBC weather cloudy for most areas, with some patchy rain in central and southern areas, a high of 22 degrees.
This is LBC.
This is what award-winning customer service sounds like from real Octopus Energy calls.
You just get it right, the customer service, the sort of communication. You've stepped it up, I think, for an energy company, so well done.
Octopus Energy, great value and outstanding customer service, recommended by Which? 8 years running.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advance tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Here at Pets in a Pickle, our name has caused some confusion. We've had people asking us what pickles we recommend. And a lovely lady looking for a pickle costume for her pet. But they've all been barking up the wrong tree. We actually offer simple, fuss-free pet insurance policies for cats and dogs, including unlimited access to video consultations with First Vet. So, for pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. For actual pickles, try the supermarket.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
This is LBC with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
11.32 is the time, and pubs would have played a part as well. Just that sense of, and listen, I had a very middle-class upbringing. My parents' childhoods weren't particularly middle-class, but they were far from working at the mill or anything like that. And even I have some really powerful memories of community space. The mystery for me now, as we wade into this conversation, is why we let it all go. I got three things. There's the money, so austerity would have played a part. Perhaps a lack of volunteers. People weren't coming forward to help anymore to run these spaces. Viv's been in touch. She said, post-pandemic, I started a community gaming space or club, and some of the feedback we get is amazing. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. You have saved us. There's no barriers to attendance, and we have a very diverse and inclusive community. So there'd be the money and perhaps the shortage of volunteers. But as a walking middle-class cliché, I've got two questions. Why did we not realise how important it was? 0345 6060973. And it may be that the answer to the next question is the same as the answer to that question. Why wasn't there more resistance while they were taking this stuff away? We had a lovely chat a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, with a fellow whose community has combined forces to keep a pub open in town. And, you know, it feels like a bit of a nice little cheerful story. And finally, on the 10 o'clock news with Sir Trevor MacDonald or something like that. But it's not. It's speech directly to what we're talking about. Why have we not resisted more? Why have we all played our part in the collapse of community spaces? It is 11:34. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. So I want to know what difference they made to your life. But I also want to know, on a sociological level, why you think we sort of, it's a bit boiled frog, isn't it? Why we haven't clocked it before? Why we haven't been more motivated by the obvious benefits that they bring to society? James is in Didcot in Oxfordshire. James, what would you like to say?
Hello, James.
Hello.
I just wanted to say, I lived for a short while in Bratislava in Slovakia.
Oh, yes.
And I was living in a sort of an apartment block there, which had had a restaurant and a cafe underneath it.
Right.
And I started to go into the cafe over in the evening, you know, after work. Obviously, I'm working away from home. I don't really know anybody. And very quickly, I managed to find a community who embraced me and took me in. And it occurred to me that In Europe, they don't seem to have this issue. They don't seem to really have a problem with a third place. Somewhere, you know, you have your work, you have your home, but then you have another place that you go to, that you meet your friends, that you play games at, that you have, you know, that you feel part of a community in. I was thinking, we are losing this in our country.
When did we have it? Because there's part of me that's wondering about English Reserve, and the canteens that you describe were specifically, that they weren't just there to provide food, they were there to provide space and company, you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we've got nothing like that.
They're still there. Growing up, I realised how important these third places are in my life to kind of like catch me a little bit and to give me a bit of community. When I was, I left boarding school to go to a local comprehensive. And the local church and the youth club there really caught me there and gave me a community again. It made me feel welcome. And I got divorced a few years ago.
Mm.
I moved to a place called Uffington in Oxfordshire, and the local pub and the local church and the local community, again, they caught me. They kind of gave me a sense of identity again, gave me a sense that I belonged, because they were embracing, they were welcoming. There were people who weren't just kind of like protecting their spaces. They were pleased to meet a new person.
There's so many. I've got that sense, I don't know about you, of threads about to knot together, because of course one of the other things we were discussing yesterday was the huge percentage of people, I think 87% of the British public, who thought that the people who joined forces to clean up after the Farage riots last summer represented Britain. And the similar levels of support for the severity and the fairness of the sentences handed down to the people that incited the violence. And that act of cleaning up is what we're talking about here, isn't it?
It is.
It's about
it is,
coming together to make things better.
Yeah. Yeah, the youth clubs are giving teenagers somewhere to go, and the community centres for people and pensioners playing bingo, single mums kind of like finding solidarity and stuff like that.
What,
libraries and stuff, you know, working men's clubs.
Why?
I mean, I'm just listing things now, James. But
it's a living, James. I get away with it every day. Why did we not make more of a fuss as they closed down around us?
I think in a way we it's that boiled frog thing again, isn't it? But we after lockdown we kind of didn't value it as much. Suddenly we were at home and we were talking to people online a bit. I think on an individual.
Do you think that was like a catalyst? So the frog was boiling, but they turned it up several notches during lockdown.
Yeah.
And by the end, we felt like things had changed. And we may even have persuaded ourselves that they'd changed for the better, but they clearly hadn't. I'd like other people to have a crack at that. Lockdown can't be the answer to all of our ills, for people who like thinking about things, any more than immigration can for people who don't like thinking about things. But why didn't we make more of a fuss as they shut these things around us, things that have been of huge importance? I wonder whether the joke, Seamus's joke about Morris dancing, and my slightly odd feelings when I used to go to my wife's granddad's British Legion Club and just felt like you were stepping into a different era. And that meant that the new blood wasn't coming through. So that might explain why at the older end of the generational scale, they ran out of road. But the idea of somewhere for young people to go, and it being taken away, and we not feeling more aggrieved by that. Why do you think that was? I hit the numbers now. You will get through. James, thank you. Hugo is in Birmingham. Hugo, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Thanks for having me on. I want to talk to you about Birmingham, because I think all of these services, it ultimately comes down to one group who is responsible for making sure that we can have them, and that would be the city councils or your unitary authorities.
Because even if you've got a volunteer-run organisation, they're going to need a building to volunteer in, and they're going to need, electricity, and they're going to need space, and ideally they might even have some paid people on the payroll. But it's, I don't know if it's 110%, Hugo, but it is going to be a huge part of local government, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I mean, if I look at the area that I live in, obviously we've got a bankruptcy in Birmingham, in the city council, and the day centre's being closed down, and they're even closing down the local library. So where are these community groups?
Oh, the local library, not Birmingham Library.
Not the main one in the city centre.
The one next to the rep.
Not that one, the big one, but all of the other smaller community libraries are being closed down.
Well, do you know the Alexis Sale line, Hugo? You might have missed it the first time round. Alexis Sale, when austerity came in off the back of the international financial crisis, Alexis Sale said, literally, and just down the road from you, he said austerity is a response to the fact that the global financial crisis of 2008 was caused by there being too many libraries in Wolverhampton.
Well, I mean, people talk about austerity as being the main cause of the issues in Birmingham, but I don't think it could be further from the truth. If you look at some of the places that money has gone in the last few years, I mean, the NEC was sold by the City Council to Lloyds Bank for 300 million quid, and a few years later, Lloyds Bank went and sold it on for 800 million.
Great bit
of
business.
Without doing any major works to it. Yeah, great business. You've lost £500 million.
You sound young. Can I ask how old you are?
Yeah, I'm 20, James.
Right, so you don't know what's gone, really. I mean, you can remember that the daycare centre wouldn't have been for people like you, would it? So you can see police stations closing, libraries closing. Police stations were never really community hubs. It's a slightly different argument. But where do you bite, then, on the idea that society has lost something when you weren't really around to see its benefits?
I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say it's true that I was never around to see its benefits. You know, I can remember being 11 years old, being in the Scouts, having access to a community hub. But if these places go, like you said, these volunteer organisations, they're just going to have nowhere to run the services from. But then if we look to the future, I mean, there's certain places that are doing things really well. So my missus is from a small town in Wiltshire called Westbury.
Yes.
And every year they do a massive soapbox race for the community. And I went to it this year, actually. It had, 8,000 people coming down to a local event organised by a town council. So there's places that are doing these things really well. It's just a case of, securing commercial partnerships that will fund these events as sponsors and allow its continuing.
It's all about the Benjamins. It's all about the Benjamins. And that's probably the reason why we haven't... no one was telling us to resist more, because there was no money in it for anybody. And you know, I think guilty as charged. If a pamphlet comes through your letterbox and it's closing a service that you don't enjoy yourself, you're not going to get agitated by it, are you? You're not going to get exercised by it.
Well, yeah, I think that's the case. People tend to only look to what's in front of their nose, but there are people that do care.
And you're clearly one of them. Despite your tender years, Hugo.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't be putting myself through the pain of standing for the city council next year if I didn't think it was worth it.
Gosh, well, good luck. And this would be part of your ambition, would it? Trying to enhance? Because I can't quite believe this. It doesn't happen very often. I don't know how often you listen to the show, but... You,
all the time.
Oh, glad to hear it. Quite right, too. Have a lollipop. We talk about something very rarely that we haven't really discussed before, and halfway through the conversation, you sort of find yourself marvelling at how bloody obvious and huge it is as an issue, and yet we've not... I mean, you obviously clocked this a while ago.
Yeah.
I didn't. I wonder why that is. Because I don't... as you say, it's not... They weren't things that I benefited from. But when the youth theatre that I used to be in... expired or ran out of road, that would have been, I presume, a consequence of council funding. No one got in touch to say, let's campaign to keep it going. Amazing space, that. It's, all sorts of people came through that youth theatre from all sorts of backgrounds, and that's just one place in one town in one quite long period of time. Who was I with the other day who'd been there? Oh, for full disclosure, someone came in to do full disclosure, and they'd been at youth theatre before me. Was it John Coleshaw? I think it might have been John Coleshaw. Krishnan Gurumurthy did it as well. The same youth theatre, not at the same time. One of the lads out of, not Little Britain, the other one, the League of Gentlemen, one of them, Steve Pemberton, I think. There was a picture of him. And extraordinary. And they went on to be actors. The point I'm making is the opposite. Everybody got so much out of it that you look back and think, I wouldn't be able to do that now. How different would your life be if you hadn't had access to these places? You never know. It's pure Robert Frost, isn't it? Two roads diverge in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by. What? Where would it be if you'd not had those moments to break out of your own little hermetically sealed socio-economic chamber and get to know lots of other people? That's on a meta scale, on a micro scale. How different would your life have been if you'd never got to know your neighbours? If Robert Frost is a bit too erudite for you, think of it as a sliding doors moment, if you prefer your Gwyneth Paltrows to your Robert Frosts. It is it's extraordinary to think, and that might be part of the reason why we didn't resist it more, because we didn't really know what we were losing. 11:45 is the time.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
You've been humiliated beyond all belief.
Straight to the point.
Just pull the plug. There's no conversation to be had here.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
It's got worse. What is the problem they've got over there?
Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 5% AER variable. That includes a 2.25% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
For a whole year, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that dream holiday or a weekend getaway. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18+ UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.89% gross. Terms apply.
Vodafone's new customer service is a little bit different. It's called Just Ask Once. Message them on the Vodafone app. You deal with one person and they keep you updated until it's sorted, so you can get on with your day. Walkies it is then. Just Ask Once. Customer service made easy from Vodafone, the nation's network.
Available via your My Vodafone app. Messaging service only. Exclusions apply. Vodafone UK supporting the nation since 1984. More details at vodafone.co.uk/network.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
Six packs of popcorn?
I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply. See our website for full details.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
James O'Brien on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
It is 11:48 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. I wonder... Yeah, I wonder if you could do it. Would everyone just laugh at you? If you just tried to build a political, or an element of a political movement, based on third spaces, as they're called, bringing things. Well, New Labour did it, didn't they, with Sure Start and other things. And then the Tories got in, or the Coalition got in 2010, and some of the damage that they've done has gone, I think, largely unremarked. How many youth centres do you think have closed since 2010 in England and Wales? This research is from June of last year. My thanks to River on Blue Sky for sending me a couple of fascinating articles. I do it if you want to do it either in terms of numbers or in terms of percentages, like the proportion of council-run youth centres that in England and Wales, I haven't got the numbers for Scotland or Northern Ireland, that have closed since austerity started in 2010. Why have we not talked about this more? Even when Starmer gave that hideous Islands of Strangers speech, talking about why we don't have the things that used to break down barriers or enhance connectivity and community and cohesion in societies. I'll tell you, I won't do a hook and tease on this in case you're going to be busy later and you'll miss the numbers because I want you to have them. 2/3 of council-run youth centres in England and Wales since 2010 have shut down. It's not just the facilities, of course, it's the specialist workers who ran them. And there's some research here from Unison, the Public Services Union, explaining that the young people left, if you like, abandoned or put at risk of isolation. They're more likely to get swept into gang or knife culture, and they're more likely to take part in antisocial activities on the streets, which makes the community even less cohesive. And if they're much, much older, 20 years down the line, they become the people that are most likely to go out and try to set fire to hotels full of people. So that's 2/3 in proportional percentage terms. In total terms, in terms of numbers, it's over 1,000. So since David Cameron became Prime Minister in 2010, over 1,000 youth centres have closed. And we wonder why we feel more atomised and fragmented than ever before. 11:51 is the time. Chris is in Macclesfield. Chris, what made you pick up the phone?
It's because it feels like not many people are talking about what I feel is one of the oldest child or youth services, like youth centre.
Dip, dip, dip.
The Boy Scouts and yes. The Girl Guides.
There it is. And the Beavers. Yeah. Don't forget the Beavers.
I was going to say, I actually started right at the bottom. Bear in mind, I'm 31 now, so this is going back like 15, 16, 17 years ago. But the hut that I originally went to is still standing, and they're still in there every week. I remember at 7:30 every Wednesday night, 7:30 till 9, both myself and my brother, whilst he was in the age bracket for it, we were both there every Wednesday night playing games, learning new crafts, learning new things. Had leaders that were there.
Meeting new people.
Well, exactly. Yeah, not necessarily people I went to school with, but it was people from the whole town that I was from, literally from the outskirts right to the centre of town. Everyone was there. My partner's niece, she's just gone from either brownies up to rainbows or rainbows up to brownies. I don't know which order it is because I didn't do that one. But she's just been on her first trip for a weekend. She's come back. She's absolutely shattered. She loves it and she can't wait for the next one.
I'm just trying to work out why this is a conversation that simultaneously feels essential and not unpopular, but not popular. Do you see what I mean? I don't know what word to use. The thing I'm thinking of is
you haven't got many people to run it, because unfortunately, not many people these days will do something for free. All the leaders that run scouts, guides, brownies, and everything like that, they are all volunteering. And I actually went through it myself. Like I said, I went from Cubs, Beavers, Scouts. I went into Explorers. And being in Scouting actually helped me find one of my first jobs when I moved away, to be an activity instructor. I loved what we were doing on the trip. So I went away, did that. As soon as I moved back home, I went straight back to my old Scout group. And I said, yeah, I'm back now for a couple of months. Can I help out? And they said, yeah, no problem at all. Sign on this dotted line. We'll get you helping out.
Is it chicken and egg, though? Because if we're talking about community spirit, then you're more likely to volunteer. The more community spirit there is, the more likely people are to volunteer in the community.
Well, potentially, but it's where I go back to, not many people want to do things for free these days. Everybody wants to monetize things. I mean, I'm surprised we don't have to pay for fresh air, but that's a completely different story.
Well, they'll privatize it if they can.
I do feel like people expect to be paid, even if it's a small amount, for doing everything.
Also, there's a sort of, there's a political ideology abroad that you're an idiot if you do anything for nothing. You know, you sort of think the way that Donald Trump, who has his admirers in this country, not many, I grant you, but he has some very noisy admirers in this country. He seems to think that people who serve in the military are kind of idiots for prioritising other people over their own self-advancement. And I don't know. I hope you're wrong. I'm now going to get bombarded by people who tell me that they are indeed volunteers, but it doesn't disprove the overall theory. What's interesting about the Scouts, Chris, and I don't know if you knew this, is they've actually had a pretty good couple of years. They had an absolutely disastrous 2021. They came out the back of lockdown, suffering the worst membership slump since the Second World War, but they've been on a bit of an uptick since then. So that must mean that the volunteers are turning up, as well as the little Scouts.
I have no say, because I've been tempted to go back, because I've since moved to town to be with my partner now, and I have been looking at the local club and scout groups to see if I can go and help out once I finish my day job. Mm. But it's some of the skills, I still think back to some of them these days, doing like the knot tying, fire making, how to build a tent, what cover to look for. Some of those skills I would not know properly to this day, or think back to this day, if someone hadn't have given up some of their free time, volunteered to come and help out. And it's what inspired me to go and help out.
And you will have inspired others. And there it is. You've got the chicken and egg on the one hand, and then the domino effect on the other. Two cliches for the price of one on this programme today. Thank you, Chris. Sully says, people laugh at me because my answer to almost every problem in modern life is sure start. One of its major strengths was just being somewhere where people could talk to each other. Not necessarily even the practitioners, but the other mums tearing their hair out. I had a peripatetic job, so when I was exhausted and thirsty, I knew there was somewhere I could just drop in to experience that communal hug. And a very unjudgmental space is sure starts as well. There was some justification of their closure on the grounds that lots of middle-class mums used them and that they didn't really need the community support. But that's such a bleak analysis of humanity. Whether it was even statistically true or not doesn't matter, does it? The idea that you don't need community cohesion or community enhancement or community enhancing initiatives if you're better off is absurd. That's exactly how we become distinct and separate from each other. Park run's probably quite middle class, isn't it? I'd have thought. I don't know. Am I going to get into trouble for that? Anyway, anything that gets people to do things together is a win. Michael is in Eltham. Michael, what would you like to say?
Hi, it's Loughton, but anyway, thanks for having me, James.
You're very welcome, even if it is Loughton. I was trying to work my Eltham quotient. I'm down on Eltham for this week, but you carry on.
I'm coming at this from a different angle. I'm talking from the community of dance, really, which can seem superficial to some people, but it's really, really important.
Who does it seem superficial to?
I don't know, but it's it's fitness, it's energy, it's talent that you see, and it's joining a different.
Where can you do it? How does it support itself? And I'm sorry to be boring, but how easy would it be, for example, for you to set up a group, a community dance group in Loughton or Eltham or wherever you were?
Well, no, I mean, actually, what I'm talking about is a salsa community. I'm talking about London and around Britain.
But how easy is it to, like, the venues available? Is it easier or harder than it was 10 years ago? Does it need volunteers
harder.
Or do people make a living out of it? Do you see what I mean? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, it's much harder. And people do make a living out of it.
Why is it harder?
It's the venues. The venues in London are all closing down. There was a massive one just by Temple Station, South of Temple, that closed just recently. TfL, it's TfL Land. They wanted it back. It's all about property prices that create, you know.
So they have to own it. So this takes us back to Hugo in Birmingham and selling stuff off, often in very, unproductive and unprofitable ways, because your average, presumably the average person in charge of that department at the council is not quite as beady-eyed and effective at their job as the average private sector property developer. And that's a social change, Michael. I haven't got the coordination for salsa, and I'm one of those people that even music teachers give up on when they say everyone can learn to sing, and then I sing and they say, well, maybe not quite everyone. I'd be the same with salsa. But that, the reason I was pushing you towards the uniting theme of third spaces, the first thing you need is literally the space, and then you need the people. If you haven't got the space, it doesn't matter how many people you've got. And that's a social change. I haven't mentioned it for a couple of shows, so I'll mention it again now. The Nye Bevan play at the National, starring Michael Sheen. It's easy to remember the name. It's called Nye. That really brought home to me the role that a sort of trade union ethos, not even the trade union movement, but a trade union ethos, how much it changes a society. The little Welsh village where he came from, everyone paid into a health fund. And the health fund was available to the people who didn't pay into it, which would most obviously be the wives and children, or the out-of-work miners. And that simple philosophical principle is absolutely intrinsic to community, and it feels like something the average person growing up in this country today might not even recognise.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midday, the Lionesses are set to celebrate their Euros win in front of thousands of fans in central London. They are about to take part in an open-top bus parade ahead of a victory ceremony outside Buckingham Palace. LBC's David Dom is there.
Well, the party has started. The England fan band led the crowd with chants of "Football's coming home," and then a recap of the run to the final. Every goal cheered by the thousands of fans that line the streets of the Mall, some since early this morning, waving their flags, wearing their England shirts, and waiting for their heroes to turn up with the trophy and celebrate even more history that's been created by the Lionesses. David Dom, LBC, at Buckingham Palace.
A UN-backed monitor has warned a worst-case scenario of famine is unfolding in Gaza. Sir Keir Starmer is due to discuss the situation and Britain's next steps at an emergency cabinet meeting this afternoon. Israel strongly rejected claims it is responsible for food shortages. A row has broken out between Labour and Reform over Nigel Farage's pledge to scrap the Online Safety Act. Reform says the new rules, intended to protect children online, suppress freedom of speech. The Technology Secretary, Peter Kyle, was asked about that position this morning.
We have people out there who are extreme pornographers, peddling hate, peddling violence. Nigel Farage is on their side. Make no mistake about it, if people like Jimmy Savile were alive today, he'll be perpetrating his crimes online.
Mr. Farage has demanded an apology from Peter Kyle, describing those comments as disgusting. A whistleblower has told LBC that ambulance crews in London are facing monumental demand. Some staff are said to be moving abroad to countries like Australia and facing their own mental health crises. James, a paramedic whose name and voice we've changed, says they're under huge pressure.
We had over 7,000 CADs in one night, which is, to put into context, what we used to experience on sort of New Year's Eve sort of levels of calls. And this is in the summer. So you can imagine what this winter potentially is going to look like if that's what we're sort of getting just on a regular day.
The London Ambulance Service says it does everything it can to support staff well-being. President Trump has officially opened a new golf course at his resort in Aberdeenshire. He thanked Sir Keir Starmer and Scotland's First Minister John Swinney, who was among the assembled audience. Mr. Trump is due to return to the US this afternoon after his five-day visit here. In the city, the FTSE 100 a little while ago was up 41 at 91.23. The pound buys $1.33 and a euro 15. LBC weather, cloudy this afternoon with some rain in central and southern areas, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Car owners, you could be owed thousands in compensation. If you bought a car on finance from 2007 onwards, it may have been sold with hidden commissions. Text CLAIM to 86688. My Claim Group. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. You don't need to use a CMC. You can claim direct to your lender and the Financial Ombudsman for free. Text CLAIM to 86688.
Claims made simple.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 12 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Thank you for that. It's a funny one, isn't it? There's a danger of the North Norfolk Digitals creeping into our contemplations on kind of topics like the one we did in the last hour. But my job, of course, is to ensure that that doesn't happen. I don't always succeed. I think we can both agree about that. But there's something huge there. It feels like one of those things we stumble into and return to again and again and again. Again, my job is to find ways of returning to it again and again and again that are neither repetitious nor dull. But my goodness me, considering how many times I've quoted that Alexei Sale joke about austerity being a response to the fact that there were too many libraries in Wolverhampton, you'd have thought we'd have clocked a little bit sooner. And considering how much time is dedicated to talking about division in our society and fracturing in our society, you'd have thought we'd have clocked a little bit sooner how the engines of cohesion, the engines of community, being closed down at a rate of knots over the course of the last 15 years would have, and probably beyond as well, would have probably contributed to some of the problems that we discuss every day. I guess it's just at the moment we're living in a media environment where it's a lot more productive and even perhaps profitable to stand up and shout, it's all the fault of immigrants, rather than standing up to work out what the real reasons for problems may be. So there we are. 5 minutes after 12 is the time. I find this subject absolutely fascinating, okay, on a number of levels. And it is the first conversation in a long time that we've had inspired by Donald Trump, the President of the United States of America. We're not veering into some of the more unpleasant questions that he poses. For example, how can a man who claims to be his very good friend insist that he's also a great protector of women in the context of criminality? It's much simpler stuff than that. In fact, I'll show you exactly what it is.
Well, I say two things to Europe. Stop the windmills. You're ruining your countries. I really mean it. It's so sad. You fly over and you see these windmills all over the place, ruining your beautiful fields and valleys and killing your birds. And if they're stuck in the ocean, ruining your oceans.
He's a little bit obsessed with them, isn't he? And I don't think it's enough to point out that he is very much enthralled to or in the pocket of fossil fuel companies. There's a real personal animosity to the windmill, which we touched on in the past on this program. I posted something very pretentious either last night or this morning. I think it was last night. In response to an observation by the Financial Times journalist Stephen Bush, whose work should be required reading, should be on the curriculum. He says, I will never understand how a minority of people have decided that wind farms, significantly prettier than pylons, coal power plants, nuclear power plants, and almost certainly fusion power plants, are ugly. In terms of energy generation, what else are you hoping for that is better? I'd never thought of it like that. I happen to quite like most of the things that he's listed, for reasons that I will sound even more pretentious about in approximately 3 minutes' time. But it occurred to me, as I read that, and I'd never thought this before, that when Brunel was building his bridges, or they decided to put a whopping great viaduct across the middle of Stockport, would the locals, would there have been local opposition to that on the grounds that it was going to spoil the view? And I wondered whether that was the case. I think I wrote, you have to presume that Brunel and co. cheesed off a lot of their contemporaries with their bridges, etc. And a couple of clever responses, including one pointing out from Jacek, there's a whole genre of art dedicated to criticism of the Industrial Revolution. The idea that building factories and mills and whopping great chimneys would... Half of Turner's oeuvre was about changes caused by industrial progress. I love this. I love this as a topic because I love the windmills. What way into it will we go? How are we going to do it? I mean, the mystery of how people can be opposed to them when Stephen Bush's point is so obviously true. What would you rather have outside your bedroom window? What would you rather have within your view? A coal-fired power station or a windmill? A wind turbine? Yeah, exactly. And the question of where the opposition comes from. Do you remember when we were talking about HS2 and we hadn't properly clocked just what a problem NIMBYism is for us? The main reason why HS2 ended up costing so much more than it was supposed to was because of the amount of tunnels that they had to build in order to avoid upsetting people whose views were going to be affected. Not people who were going to lose their homes. They were very, very lavishly recompensed in most cases. Well, not lavishly, but they were satisfactorily recompensed in most cases. And it was the views, it was spoiling the views that was the big driver for putting the rails underground. And that cost was what essentially did for HS2 in its original inception. I can't do a phone on whether or not you like them, can I? Wind turbines, they're not windmills, they don't mill anything. It's Donald Trump called them windmills, it doesn't mean that we have to. I really, really like them. And the reason why I really, really like them is actually nothing to do with energy production. I also really like bridges and cranes. I like things that speak to humanity's successful harnessing of nature. I should really have been an early adopter for sustainable energy, but I wasn't clever enough to join the dots. I like the aesthetic. I like the way that they look, but psychologically, what I really like about them is the way that they say to me and to you, look, we can actually put nature to work for us. Rather than, so you think about the conversations we were having earlier in the week, yesterday, about wildfires and floods, and nature has us in the palm of her hand. We are like twigs being caught up in wind or river and tossed around and having absolutely no say. Whereas nature can do, she can do whatever she wants with us. But every now and then, humanity finds ways of not just evading nature's power, but embracing it, enhancing it. And for me, a wind turbine is, I know this sounds weird. I know that I just said I need to be careful not to go North Norfolk Digital, but I think they're beautiful. I absolutely love them. And I love the offshore ones as well. I think they're magnificent. They make me think of Brunel's engineering, or they make me think of more historic moments where humanity has successfully either tamed nature, like a bridge isn't harnessing nature, a bridge is taming nature. So here are two places that human beings can't get from easily, from one to the other. And then you build a bridge and you can. Canals are fantastic. Canals are just magnificent feats of human engineering. There's an irony in a canal, in that just as it reached a point where they were becoming supremely effective, along comes trains and combustion engines to render them largely redundant. But think about a canal. Think about a canal. Think about a series of locks. There's a couple of places in the Midlands where locks in immediate adjacency to each other can take a boat upstairs. The idea that human beings manage to overcome hills with water, they manage to make water effectively flow uphill. You see that as a harnessing of nature. It's both a harnessing and a refusal to be cowed by it. So if a bridge is the ultimate example of human beings overcoming nature, and the wind turbine is the ultimate example of human beings harnessing nature, then the canal sits exactly in the middle of the two. It's 50% harnessing and 50% overcoming. It's harnessing because you're using the water to move stuff, and it's overcoming because you're still managing to get the boats up and down hills. So one of my odder phone-in topics, this, I grant you, but I want to know whether or not you agree that in centuries to come, or let's not say centuries, because technology is a funny old thing, and if we'd had a phone-in about canals 100 years ago, we'd have been overtaken by reality almost by tea time. But I see the wind turbine as the closest we've come, probably, in our era to creating something that's comparable to canals. Do you agree? Is the first question. 0345 6060973. The second question is the one prompted by Stephen Bush of the Financial Times, because the more you think about it, the more irresistible his point becomes. I will never not understand how a minority of people have decided that wind farms are ugly. And then you think about what the alternatives are. You could have an oil refinery at the bottom of your road. You could have an oil refinery springing up in the middle of your view. I actually also, just to be really weird and contrary, I quite like the, you know I do, because we had James Graham on the show talking about those whopping great chimneys just outside Doncaster, and I think they're absolutely beautiful as well. There's a train station, you go up that line, you practically go under them. It's so and they are just magnificent. It's another example of man overcoming nature, but not harnessing it in the way that a wind turbine does, because a wind turbine doesn't involve loads of filthy black smoke being belched out into the atmosphere. So what are the alternatives? You could have an oil refinery. What would you rather have? Okay, go to your window now. Don't do this if you're driving. Go to the window now. Look out of the window. Or think of your favourite view. And tell me what you'd rather have in it now. An oil refinery. 100 electricity pylons. A nuclear power plant like the one Homer Simpson works in, just to give you points of cultural reference, or some other sort of power, a coal-fired power station, or whatever a fusion power plant turns out to look like if they ever get around to building one. So even leaving aside conversations or arguments about energy production or energy generation, how could anybody say, oh, no, I'd rather have an oil refinery? So Trump did that. He said to Starmer, you should go and get the oil out of the sea off Dundee, out of the North Sea off Dundee. So he's slagging off wind turbines while encouraging us to get more oil out of the North Sea and burn it. It's quite insane, isn't it? If you'd stop for 30 seconds to think about it, it's quite insane. But it's not unique. The two things, Trump's opposition to them for really weird and not entirely comprehensible grounds, but also this notion, this narrative that's out there that things could be better, that things are less ugly than wind turbines. There are two epic absurdities here. And I'm just wondering how it happened. Do you think it's as simple as Kyoto, that play I told you about? Do you think that somehow, if you've got your right Tufton Street people on side and a few client journalists, you can actually create a backlash against wind turbines because they're going to be bad for business for the fossil fuel lobby? Or is there something more subtle going on, something more psychological going on? 0345 6060973. That's a really good question, he said, even though I say so myself. Is it just, because you think of the kind of prominent faces that set themselves up against wind turbines, and you have to ask yourself, is it possible, whether they realise it or not, that they are just shilling for fossil fuels? How can anybody have a problem with a wind turbine? It might be a bit noisy, but it's not as noisy as a coal-fired power station. So that's the point, isn't it? We have to do energy generation somewhere. So you can't say, don't do it here. Eventually, you're going to have to pick the space where we're going to do it. Fracking? You want fracking on your doorstep? Would you prefer? These people prefer fracking to wind. How does that work? There is never going to be a shortage of wind, especially on this program. Ba-dum-tish. There is never going to be a shortage of wind. And yet I can think of debates that I've witnessed, possibly even taken part in, where you've effectively got Wind energy on one side and fracking on the other. Fracking on the other. I don't know if we can unpack the anatomy of this debate. How did it start? Where has it come from? 0345 6060 973. How have we even entertained the notion that wind turbines are a bad thing? Where does it come from? Give me a call. And on a slightly less predictable perspective, I don't want every call. That's why I've spent a bit of time setting up the grown-up conversation. Because I am also interested in whether anyone else finds them as beautiful as I do. That is, I guess, one way into or out of the broader conversation. So you've got this curious Donald Trump-flavoured animosity or antipathy towards something that is objectively better than all of the other alternatives. And then you've got the aesthetics of it. Turner, the painter, the landscape artist Turner, he plied his trade, you probably didn't know this, in Brentford, in what is now a pub, and was then a butcher's shop owned by his uncle. So Turner had a bad chest, and he got shipped out of Soho, where his dad was a barber, and they set him up at his uncle's butcher in Brentford. And that's where he started working on light and started working on watercolours and landscaping. And as his career progressed, he became quite a passionate enemy of industrialisation. And you can understand why. But have a look around the country that we live in now and ask yourself where we would have been economically in the 19th century if it hadn't been for the Industrial Revolution. So where does the wind turbine fit into both that historical context, but also my very, very anoraki enthusiasm for the sheer aesthetic heft of the things? And if anyone can turn this into a satisfactory radio phone-in, it's me.
This is LBC.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
When you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you.
Life feels better with a smile. Fanning Dental Group Clinics. Modern, comfortable and affordable dentistry for all. See online for our price match promise. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling and the whole world smiles with you.
Banningdental.co.uk.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai Electrifying Summer Event. Are you in? 18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
James O'Brien on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
That's so gratifying to see you queuing up to talk about something that is ostensibly a little bit weird. But we will also be crossing live to the Mail shortly, where Helen Hoddinott is in the thick of the celebrations of the Lionesses' glorious victory on Sunday night. But I'm here to talk about wind turbines, partly because Donald Trump's most powerful or most urgent advice to the people of the United Kingdom is to stop the windmills. To which my first question, my first response is, why? Why have this small and weird bunch of people become so opposed to them? And then the second question is a little bit sillier, and it's just about whether or not you think they're as beautiful as I do. Sarah's in Worcester. Sarah, what do you think?
Hello. I wanted to say that I think this is an excellent topic for discussion, and I'm glad I'm not alone in loving a wind turbine.
I think we've done it again, Sarah. We've opened up another previously unexplored avenue of popular consideration.
Yeah, it's nice to know I'm not alone. I think they are absolutely awe-inspiring, and I used to live very close to a rural wind farm in Australia, And I remember driving through these rolling hills, and one would pop up and another would pop up. And at first they looked so tiny and small, but as you got closer, the sheer scale of these things is awe-inspiring. I remember asking my dad, how did they get this here? How did they build this? How did they get up to the top for maintenance? Like, it's absolutely incredible. And then I then moved to Melbourne in Australia near a fuel refinery, and it was these massive vats of who knows what. There was a tower with flames coming out the top of it 24/7. The comparison is just crazy. And I think people who have influence, like Donald Trump, like anybody in the spotlight, does have influence. The things that they say have an impact. And so it annoys me when people with influence say stupid things.
Well, I mean, I'd be out of business if people with influence stopped saying stupid things all the time. But, you know, everything in moderation. Hearing you speak then, It does make me think of history, because I do look at other things humans have built over the years and marvel. And I marvel often at how they did it without the technology that we have today. So if you see like Ely Cathedral or Worcester Cathedral, just to keep it close to home for you, you see a magnificent cathedral and think, how the hell did they build that without all the kit and caboodle that we've got today? But I love the fact you had that reaction to something that was built in your own lifetime. You're staring at something built in your own lifetime and you are awed, A-W-E-D. You're genuinely awed by it.
I am awed, but I think you're right. I think it is these things that inspire awe in us are things that are from history and things that are built, like the pyramids, like, oh my gosh, how did they do that? But even mills, like we have used water mills, we have used windmills for a long time. You have historic mills. So I think it's these things, like you spoke about bridges. It's like, oh my goodness, like, you know, how did they do that? These things that are timeless, they serve timeless needs and they work with nature, which is hopefully timeless. And so I think that's the element that is really...
And no one's funding us. No one's funding us. So maybe that's why the conversation is so skewed. There's no sort of secretly funded lobby group working on the part of nature, trying to infiltrate news coverage, trying to sort of sign up client journalists or get an editorial in the Daily Mail about how lovely stuff is. It's always going to be negative. And I wonder if it is that simple when we try and work out where the negativity comes from. Is it whether they realize it or not? That's a crucial point, actually, when it comes to gaslighting or radicalization or whatever you want to call it. But whether they realize it or not, they are simply doing what they have been programmed to do by the fossil fuel lobby. Or is there something fairer going on? I mean, if you've had experiences like Sarah's and you've arrived at the opposite conclusion, I don't want to be glib, but you really loved living near that whopping great power plant where they were belching flames into the atmosphere 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and then you move next door to a wind turbine and it was the worst mistake you've ever made in your life. I'm obviously exaggerating, but there must be a counterpoint to this. Or is it just the case that the people who hate the wind turbines are doing it solely because they love the fossil fuels? It's 25 minutes after 12. You're listening to James O'Brien Yesterday. 5 minutes or so till we cross to the Mall. I've just got some breaking news for you. Essex police have just said that 14 people have now been charged with offences following disorder at protests outside the hotel in Epping that is housing asylum seekers. It was 12 at close of play yesterday, so those figures are going up. I have no word yet on whether Suella Braverman has noticed, because of course the last time she was asked she claimed she had no idea that there'd been any arrest whatsoever and that the whole thing had unfolded peacefully. We're up to 14 charges now, not just arrests, but charges. I'll keep you up to date on that. But we're returning to the wind farms question. Steve is in Powys. Steve, what would you like to say?
Hello. Well, first I'm going to deprogram you a little bit. You accepted what Mr. Trump said about, or what the lobby says about them being noisy. They're not noisy.
I didn't say they were noisy.
You did.
When?
Well, we listened back to the tape.
Oh, well, I can do that. I don't need a tape. I've got the LBC app, mate. It's all about the app these days.
Okay, well, that was...
Go on.
Yeah, well, I work in the industry. I have done for a long time. UK and Ireland mostly, across Europe and a little bit elsewhere in the world. Onshore, offshore, Scottish mountains in the snow, you know, abseiling off the top of them, that sort of thing. And I've stood at the bottom of one with a noise meter to demonstrate to a protester that the noise you make rubbing your hand down your anorak jacket in decibels is about the same as 2.5 megawatt turbine at full power.
Really? It wasn't always the case, I don't think.
No, the early ones are noisy things, but yeah. it's like the the early aeroplanes were wood and cloth biplanes, and now we've got supersonic jet fighters. You know, technology advances. I'm stood talking to you. You can probably hear some noise in the background. A synchronizing plant, which is being built as part of the transition from fossil to wind. The a 236 gigawatt power plant here. We're building a capacitor that will allow the grid to stabilize when wind is up and demand is down, and the other way around. That's what's happening right now.
I didn't understand all of that.
No, well, one of the problems that the anti-lobby
yeah.
goes with, oh, when it's not windy, you don't have energy,
that's
which
right.
is obviously true.
Yes,
but we're building capacitance systems so that we will have battery storage, we'll have liquefied air storage, we'll have other forms of storage.
Do you despair at the discourse? Do you despair at the discourse?
Because if you imagine it's the year, I don't know, 1920, and some guy says, oh, these cars, they're just a fad, I'm going to stick with my horse and buggy.
Yeah.
You know, okay, mate, yeah, you crack on. 20 years later, he may still have his horse and buggy, but everyone else has got cars, and there's an infrastructure around them, like metalled roads and power fuel stations, that sort of
well,
thing.
Well, that's what I mean. That's exactly what I mean by despair, because is it so blindingly obvious to you that this
happening.
Is the future?
You know, this, I'm literally standing on part of the engineering progress from fossil to transitional to renewable. I'm looking at it happening. I'm on the site right now. I'm being paid to be here.
Where do you think the opposition comes from? And I've obviously touched on some of the obvious answers, but could it be that is where it all comes from?
I think that things like they're noisy, they kill birds, which is not true, by the way.
Since when does he care about birds? He doesn't even care about people.
Well, no, obviously not. But
cats and dogs he cares about, but only when non-existent people are eating them.
It ties into some of the other subjects this week. You know, the things that are fed out, like they're noisy, they kill birds, they're bad for you, they don't make electricity, whatever, they give you epilepsy, all that nonsense. Mm. None of it is true, but it comes out in little snippets that people get off their feeds, and they don't question them.
And what is it appealing to in me? Fear of change? Fear? I
honestly don't know.
No, I'm not sure I do either.
I worked for Renewables UK for a bit. They're sort of liaison committee to the protesters and the antis.
Right.
And I've stood on wind farms with the Royal Society for the Protection of Birds and various other groups that were against these things. And just stood there with a noise meter and said, look, it's not noisy. Rub your hand down your coat. Oh, yeah, it's 38 decibels. That sort of thing. And it fades away. You know, every single one, when you put a light on it, it goes away. But most people don't see the light put on it. They think they give you epilepsy. They think they don't make electricity.
I've not heard that one before, but I get it. Like a sort of form of strobing, would it be? Is that the claim?
Yeah, it's one of those ones.
What about the slightly weirder element of this phone? Do you think they're beautiful?
I do. I love them. I've got so many selfies of me like standing on the top of a Scottish mountaintop in the snow on a wind turbine, roped on and smiling, or people looking down at me as I abseil down the damn thing on the outside because I was the safety lead and I wanted to demonstrate that the kit works. Not so many when I worked into energy from waste. There's not so many selfies of me in a different part of renewables standing next to 7,000 tonnes of rubbish.
No, well, that's a really good point as well. And I got this from Jim. Imagine there's a few acres of land at the back of your house, say 400 metres away, and they want to put up 10 wind turbines. Do you really think they would be so beautiful then? There's two things. They're not going to go up in heavily built up areas. But secondly, if they're as quiet as you say they are, I'd be absolutely delighted, I think.
Yeah, no problem. I love them. Genuinely, I think they're aesthetically pleasing. Well, that's a matter of opinion.
Yes, that's a very good point.
I don't know if I'm still on air, but one of the protester groups that I was engaged by my firm to discuss with, so I was head of safety for the firm, amongst other things. So the protester group down on the Kent somewhere, I forget the exact town, but it was within sight of Dungeness Nuclear Power Station, so it may have been the next county along. And the protester group turned out to be just four or five people who'd been holding this thing up for 5 years.
Yeah.
And the main objection they had was, we think they're ugly. And I looked out of this guy's front window. We were in a house. There were so few protesters, someone's front room. And my boss said, well, you've got Dungeness Nuclear Power Station out your window. Like, literally the ugliest building from 1,000 miles in any direction. He goes, oh, well, we've got used to that.
Oh, that's perfect. I suspect that's not the only time you've told that story, Steve. You told it trippingly. Amelia Cox is here with your headlines.
The Lionesses have taken part in an open-top bus parade and are about to celebrate their Euro success at a ceremony outside Buckingham Palace. Thousands of fans have turned out in central London to welcome them home. Sir Keir Starmer is holding an emergency cabinet meeting this afternoon to discuss the UK's response to the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. Israel has strongly rejected claims it is responsible for food shortages. And Nigel Farage has called for an apology from the Technology Secretary after he accused him of being on the side of extreme pornography. The Reform UK leader has pledged to scrap the government's new Online Safety Act over fears it suppresses freedom of speech. LBC weather, mostly cloudy this afternoon with a few spots of light rain, sunny spells and some sharp showers developing in southwest England and South Wales, a high of 22 degrees.
LBC.
Today's the day. The day that Jim feels he can't carry on. Unable to see beyond his problems. His pain unbearable. So thankfully today, he reached out to us. Samaritans. And that could save Jim's life. Leave a gift in your will to Samaritans and support people who are struggling to carry on. Help us save lives today, tomorrow, always. To find out how, search Samaritan's Wills.
So, where are we going?
You wanted to try something new? Well, we're here.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event.
I booked a test drive in the all-new Insta online. It's the 2025 World Electric Vehicle winner, and we save £500 if we order before the 31st of August.
Ooh, very stylish.
Oh, and it's Hyundai, by the way.
The Hyundai electrifying summer event. Are you in?
18 plus UK retail customers only. Excludes Motability. Registered by 30th of September. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
Who's a good human? Alex is. Because today's dog walk with Lulu the Corgi has turned into an off-grid adventure. But wherever Lulu's nose takes her, Alex will always gladly follow. That's why he also chooses Butternut Box for Lulu's meals. Freshly prepared and served straight from the fridge. Helping Lulu thrive from nose to tail. Meaning one less trek for Alex as we deliver each box straight to your door. Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
James O'Brien. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
It is 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. This is just delightful, Claire. Thank you. So I got this message at the top. And tell me that your curiosity wouldn't be piqued by a message like this. Actually, sorry, I don't expect you to answer that. I feel like I've just texted my friend and I forgot that you're doing a show. That's one of the most lovely texts I've ever received. So obviously I then want to find out what the previous text was that you forgot you were sending to a radio presenter and thought that you were just sending to a friend wittering away in the background. Sorry, James, but what was the name of that scientist who wrote the book In Praise of Nuclear Energy? And I will tell you, but not until we've spoken to Helen Hodinott, who is on the Mall, where the Lionesses are celebrating their victory in circumstances that I think, Helen, we can fairly describe as euphoric.
Yes, James, euphoric celebrations kicked off here after midday with a marching band getting the crowd riled up with a rendition of Sweet Caroline, then an open-topped bus emblazoned with the word champions carrying the Lionesses set off from the top of the Mall. The squad was waving, cheering, dancing about with the trophy hoisted at the front. Some of the squad sprayed water at the crowd as if it was champagne, and the atmosphere was, as you can probably imagine, electric. The bus made its way down the route, flanked by huge alternating Union Jacks and England flags, which have been hung down the Mall. Faces are painted, horns were blaring, and girls were hoisted onto shoulders to get the best views of their heroes. These fans told me how it felt seeing the parade.
Absolutely brilliant. It was really good.
It was
Awesome, Chloe Gellert, so cool.
Yeah, we saw all the players, it was really fun.
Oh, they were waving, weren't they?
Like, yeah, having a good old party.
Waving their flags and stuff.
Showing the trophy as well, yeah.
It was so good, just seeing all the players and stuff, yeah. It was just amazing. Lots of glasses and lots of cheering.
Yeah, I just wanted to be a part of it. It's such an amazing moment.
So just great vibes all round. The homecoming ceremony is now being staged in front of Buckingham Palace at the Queen Victoria Memorial. That will run until about 1 o'clock. And it's thought that about 50,000 fans have gathered here today, which dwarfs the turnout for the 2022 celebrations. They did take place in the much more confined Trafalgar Square, though. But the dedication of fans here today, James, they started actually arriving at 5 a.m. to get the most coveted spots along the railings.
Helen, thank you. Forgive me if you've already answered this question. I was getting a bit caught up in all the high spirits. But you mentioned girls being hoisted onto shoulders. Is there an observable gender breakdown in the people that have gathered to celebrate?
I would say it is probably majoritively women and girls here. I mean, at one point I was looking at the bus and I could barely see it for all of the girls that have been put onto shoulders of parents. So it is, and the atmosphere is just so positive. And it really feels like a special day, you know, especially for them being able to watch this.
Lovely stuff. Helen Holden, our LBC's reporter, reporting, as you would expect her to do, live from the Mall, where Lionesses are celebrating their victory in the company of 50,000 delighted fans. Amazing scenes, actually. I've got screens in the studio, obviously, and they're really going for it. It's the turn of the coach, Serena, to share her thoughts from the stage as well. Her CV is beginning to look like something that was concocted in a laboratory. And speaking of science, back to the conversation. You see what I did there? Back to the conversation about wind turbines. And, well, there's two things, really. There's the political and the personal. So the political is, well, why have some people got such a problem with them? Up to and including the President of the United States of America. On what possible planet would you rather either look at or absorb the consequences of an oil refinery over a wind farm? It just, for me at least, beggars belief. And then on part two, to go even further, you wonder whether you're alone in finding them beautiful. It turns out that I'm not. Matt is, well, on Hadrian's Wall, it says here. Matt, what would you like to say?
James, long-time listener, first-time caller, and how to follow the euphoria of Helen there.
You're doing well. Lionesses. You're doing a pretty good job, mate. I'm not going to lie.
She describes her atmosphere as being electric and how wonderful that looking in the distance I can see some turbines and what a way forward it is. I'm a captain out in the North Sea, and I take technicians out to the offshore wind farms. And looking at the future, I've been selected to captain a boat that gets transferred where its engines are being taken out and being replaced with 10 tons of batteries.
Really?
And for the first in the world. And it would be an absolute honor to captain this in terms of a pioneering way forward and electrifying what is usually, a reliance on the combustion engine.
And again, as with all the people that I would describe as experts or the people very closely associated with the industry and with the business of wind, as it were, you sound as if it's an absolute no-brainer. You're going to be even more baffled than I am by elements of public discourse that treat it as if it's controversial. Well, you've got the President of the United States saying, stop the windmills. It's bonkers, right?
Well, it's good. Where is the future? Where is the future? We have to advance. When you look at electric cars, just take it back a bit. Look at the electric drill. Look at the cordless hedge trimmer and all the things that once used power now being taken out and being replaced with battery power, where the batteries are getting smaller and more longer lasting.
Everything's moving. All the direction is positive. Do you like the look of them as well? Do you find them handsome?
I tell you, I look out on this horizon and I've got a beautiful landscape in front of me next to Hadrian's Wall here. And it just baffles me how people can't look at a windmill. And next to Hadrian's Wall, you've got a 2,000-year-old wall.
Yeah.
As a symbol of, you know, mankind's ability and determination to keep out a civilization almost.
Yes.
And just behind it, you look at these bastions and symbols of mankind's ingenuity to move forward.
Have you ever done any professional sports commentary?
I have not, but I'll tell you what else, James. I live on a narrowboat, and when I'm going up locks, it baffles me just as much the same.
They're magical, aren't they? I absolutely love that. Because a lot of people have picked up on this. So David says, this guy's great. He sounds like a football commentator. Jay says, this guy is awesome. This is like football commentary for windmills. Bruce says, bloody hell, someone's had too many smarties. This guy's enthusiasm is bursting through my speakers. I've never known wind to sound so exciting. Final question. Where do you think the negativity comes from? I mean, is any of it authentic, or is it all manufactured?
When you look at the tobacco industry and the fact that how many companies were paid, it's all right, tobacco's not too bad.
Yeah, you're right.
And it could even be shifting towards the vaping, it's all right, you can get away with it. It's cool to do this. And I think the same when you look at the lobbying groups there, the oil. Trump's just...
It's just so simple.
How many backhanders has he got?
I don't know that he's had any backhanders, and of course it would be remiss of us to suggest that he has, but the idea that the motivation of the anti-wind turbine lobby is anything other than actual determination to protect the fossil fuel lobby seems increasingly hard to resist. Beautiful call in every possible way, Matt. Thank you. And I love the fact that he's at Hadrian's Wall. Because it would be tempting, wouldn't it, to think that if you're in a place of historic natural beauty, then a wind turbine is an aberration. The way that Matt described, you don't have to agree with him. I obviously fully respect the fact that you may not, but he is there describing what he can see. That's exactly what I was trying to describe at the top of the show, how it is the latest iteration or the latest incarnation of man's dominion over nature. Like a wall, the original dominion over nature would have been a wall. The first thing that man could do to refuse to be ruled by nature would be to build a wall. It would keep wild beasts out of his area, out of where he was. So you start with a wall. I'm not suggesting that the Hadrian's Wall was built to keep wild beasts out of anywhere, but I'm talking about walls. And then now you've got wind turbines harnessing nature, actually saying, we're having it. We love it. 12:43 is the time. It's always helpful when the producer writes on your screen, what are you talking about again? And it is perhaps a timely moment to remind you, we're talking about man overcoming nature and how, on this occasion, Hadrian's Wall, widely considered one of the most beautiful vistas in these islands, enhanced, improved for at least one observer by the presence of a wind turbine. Also, a little bit of a TED talk on the importance of walls through history, which I'm sure everybody else was very, very appreciative of. Benjamin is in King's Lynn, which isn't that far, of course, from Swaffham, Benjamin, which is where I had the great privilege of actually going up a wind turbine. What made you pick up the phone?
Last time that we spoke about the Great River Ouse and my eyes on how things are going in the local area in terms of nature and preservation of water. But I can tell you that even back as far as about 17 years ago, I was 15 years old, and I went to a local planning meeting regarding a wind turbine erection. And I was basically the only person in there apart from one other and a rep from E.ON, I believe it was.
How old were you at the time?
Turbine. 15.
You were a very early adopter then.
Oh, very much so. I've always been there's always been this need for progression within me.
Okay.
And I've always thought to myself that realistically, if you're talking about something that's going to be long-term, it's going to be beneficial for everyone, it's going to generate, cheaper electricity, I don't see any negatives with that. And I mean, even when I went on to work at DEFRA, just being able to go, this is how they actually look out for bird flight patterns, how they do all the monitoring. They spend years actually making sure that birds aren't going to be affected, microwave transmissions aren't going to be affected, so that people can still use the old-style electrical meters, all that sort of stuff.
So you've got some, because of course the technology, and you'll know more about this than I do, has improved enormously over the years. So some of some objections were relevant once, but they're not relevant anymore.
I would definitely agree with that. And that, realistically, out of all the people who were at that planning meeting, 15, 17 years ago at this point, it was just hilarious to sort of see the backlash just purely for the aesthetic And I love these
things. We don't like the look of them.
As markers.
Yeah, did you hear Matt? The caller before Matt talking about Dungeness Power Station is something we've got used to, but we don't want any wind turbines.
This is how I used to pick out where Skegness was, because at the coastline in Snettisham, you'd look out and you'd see the light beacons on top of the power stations over there. Now I can look out and I can see all of the different wind turbines instead.
And on a clear day.
It's a wonderful sign of progression.
On a
clear day, on the very rare clear day.
Yeah, because, I mean, there's a big old collection of them out that way. Have you ever been to the Rose and Crown in Snettisham?
I have. It's absolutely wonderful. I couldn't believe the portion size of the fish and chips.
Sunday lunch is extract. I mean, you're right. It's enough for two or three people for Sunday lunch. But easily. I love this conversation. I wish we could talk about this every day, but it would be a little bit weird if we did. Benjamin, thank you. Coming up. Did you ever go up the one in Swaffham?
I'm actually afraid of heights, so I haven't had the chance yet. I've been to the site, but I've never actually been up there.
I think it's shut now, isn't it? I think they've closed it down.
I'll find another one, even if I have to scale up the site.
It was an incredible thing. I learned so much. I think that, it was where my enthusiasm moved up a gear for this kind of thing. Cleaner, cheaper and beautiful, writes Jamie. What's not to like? To which the answer is Donald Trump, the man who told you that Haitians were eating cats and dogs, is also telling you that wind turbines are eating birds. It's 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Sheila Fogarty.
While politicians slate each other over online safety, we learn young people will spend 25 years of life glued to smart screens. What is the way forward?
Sheila Fogarty on LBC.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you, A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Who's a good human? Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're going to do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
Save this summer with Lidl. Our mini mix has something for everyone. With a pack of 12 Bon Gelati ice creams down to just £2.45 with Lidl Plus. That's how you master a meltdown. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today. 18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 30th of July.
Global Player is home to fantastic podcasts like Rachel Johnson's Difficult Women.
Join me as I sit down with game-changing women who don't always play by the rules.
Everything was so great. I would say that once I looked on the stage and saw the Pope and the President kind of swaying to the black gospel choir that I was able to bring in, that's the moment that I was like, you know, you did this.
Plus, there is so much more. Global Player. Download it now for free.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with James O'Brien.
What a lovely show, thank you. I just don't quite know what they had in common, but the last two topics seem to be things that we should be finding new ways into, don't they? The loss of community spaces. I hadn't even heard the phrase third space. I suppose it's in between, isn't it? Home and work, or home and school, somewhere else that we can go. And the idea that all the conversations that we have about society and community and division and unity have somehow managed to steer clear of that epic, huge factor in them. I suppose because it's something else that's been created by largely right-wing engines, isn't it? The destruction or the sale or the removal of community fixtures, community benefits, community spaces. And so who's going to lead the fight against that? And answer, who with a big voice, rather, in the UK media is going to be able to shout about that when they're all too busy shouting about immigrants? And then the second one, I even in my head had an idea that wind turbines were still controversial. And look, you know, here's one message at least. What an idiotic view about wind farms. Have you seen the size and scale of them? Tens of square miles of land taken up with 40-storey high wind turbines. Not productive enough for the electric generated. That last bit's not true. Get real, mate. Go and live near one and you'll soon see the damage they cause to the landscape. That came in before we took the call from Hadrian's Wall. Or indeed from the site of a new plant, describing what could be seen. And listen, some people probably find cathedrals ugly. Some people probably find, you know, Beethoven's music hideous. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I don't think I'm the first person to say that. But a huge number of people find wind turbines deeply impressive and even beautiful. And so it was with lots of infrastructure that's been built through the ages, whether it's the stuff that doesn't pollute the environment, like canals or bridges, or whether it's the stuff that does. I can see beauty in a power plant. Don't get me wrong. I really can. But if you want to choose between something that pumps shocking amounts of filth into the atmosphere and something that doesn't, it should really be a no-brainer. Tim puts it quite well. Oil lobbyists and similars don't like them because once built, they continue to generate power without the need to sell more oil or gas. So this harms their monopoly on selling more of their product. I've never been very good at shares and stocks and shares. It's one of the great regret. Well, it's never too late, I suppose. But if you pay a lot of attention to where your unearned income is coming from, where the money you're getting simply from having been well off enough to invest in something else previously, and someone says, oh, we might be turning that tap off, or we might be cutting down the amount of money you're getting for simply having money in the first place, few more lucrative returns than in the world of fossil fuels, perhaps it ceases to be a mystery. It ceases to be a mystery where the opposition comes from. I don't care whether or not it's polluting the planet. I don't care if it's killing people. I am passionately opposed to them because it will make me less profitable. It will make me less wealthy than I would be if we carried on relying on oil and gas and coal and all the other fossil fuels. It probably is that simple. Brendan's mind works a bit like mine. Did people hate the original windmills, he asks? To which the answer is, I don't know, but probably. Depends whether the Daily Mail was around at the time or not. Jane's in Camden. Jane, what would you like to say?
Hi, James. Hello. It's a pleasure to speak to you. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Thank you, Jane.
I'm really quite intrigued with where the conversation is going. I'm a big fan of the wind turbines. I think they really do define the landscape. They show progressivism, as your previous caller mentioned. And I think, working in sustainable infrastructure myself, this kind of concept of change is something that we come across, you know, the opposition to it,
yes,
all the time. And actually, you know, the people who are mostly opposed to it, I know this is an overgeneralization, but this is just from my personal experience. It is those people that are of a certain age, maybe over 60, 75. And the problem is we try to do these things. We're trying to do something to make areas progressive, to show that we're moving forward, because that is the whole point of evolution, isn't it? Is that we're constantly changing and finding new ways and better ways of doing things. And we just get this huge opposition. And it's mostly, you know, people on parish councils who just cannot see that vision. And so what happens is they close everything down for everybody.
And they have quite disproportionate power sometimes as
100%.
Well, don't they? I've read a lot about this. Private Eye have done very good work on this. In some cases, it can be just one person who is sort of a serial serial litigant stopping what you and I would describe from progress in all manner of different places.
It's very true. And the interesting about what you were saying about HS2 and the cost escalation, that's what happens.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, if you're trying to use taxpayers' money and you're trying to use it carefully, you really can't do that when you're constantly having to respond to all of these different views and all of these demands. It's just really sad.
Starmer's touched on this, hasn't he? Starmer has actually acknowledged this. And, you know, media being media, everyone focuses on a bat tunnel or things like that. But he has actually spun. He talks about cutting red tape. He's not talking about making the world more dangerous in the way that some Tories are. He's talking about what you're describing, limiting the power of a parish council, for example, to put the kibosh on something that the community would really benefit from.
Absolutely, James. And it doesn't go far enough. I cannot stress enough. They really need to do that because you have literally, you know, a group of maybe five or six or seven people who are making a decision that affects the majority. It just has to stop. And I just don't think, if you look to other countries, that anybody else does it this way. I don't understand why we do.
No. No, there's another phone in there, Jane. I hope you're listening when we have it, because you can could either contribute to it or be illuminated by everybody else's country. Is it unique to this country? I mean, we talked about massive infrastructure last time they announced HS2 as being, it's the hokey cokey of national infrastructure, isn't it? You put your HS2 in, you take your HS2 out, in, out, shake it all about. I forget what the current status is. They're doing more than they were going to do under Rishi Sunak, but not everything they were going to do when it was first announced, I think. If I've got it correct. But it was a crash course in how things get stymied or how bills get ramped up. I think that the general message was that it is peculiar to the United Kingdom, that other countries do manage to get things done a lot more effectively and a lot more easily. And it speaks perhaps of a decentralisation of power, as Jane describes it. The parish councillors that are frustrating a lot of this stuff out of pure NIMBYism probably do have too much power. But that is another example of something that is probably really important and really interesting, but which we haven't dedicated enough time and attention to on this programme previously. Let's fix that moving forward. It's coming up to 12:59. Just a quick shout out to Claire, who sent me that lovely message about forgetting that she was listening to the radio and thinking that she'd just sent a text to a friend. So please don't feel that you have to answer it. Well, I am going to answer it. The name of the chap who wrote the book about the nuclear stuff was Tim Gregory. Claire, so it's a cracking book as well. He's a lovely bloke. You can listen back to the interview. You can find it on the LBC app. Indeed, if you missed any of today's show, you can listen back on Catch Up on both Global Player and the LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news categories in the order you want. You can pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. So download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. Coming up at 4 on LBC, it's Tom Swarbrick, but now it's time for Sheila Fogarty.
Thank you very much, James. It's a bit of a mixed day in many ways. Huge celebrations happening as we speak for the Lionesses, but a great deal of sympathy and remembrance for the Southport families as well. I'll reflect on both of those stories with you between now and 2:30. You'll find a piece I wrote on Southport on the LBC app as well. We'll be live from there in half an hour. The Cabinet meets at 2. Keir Starmer updating his colleagues on his discussions over Gaza with President Trump. We'll talk about that at 3 when hopefully, possibly, we'll have a bit more detail about what was said. I'm going to start, though, with online safety. The minister responsible picks a foolish fight, I think, with Nigel Farage and calls, and there are calls, to stop under-16s using social media at all, being allowed to use social media at all. What is the way forward?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock. The Lionesses have taken part in an open-top bus tour through central London to celebrate their Euro success. Thousands of fans have travelled to welcome them home as they went down the Mall. They were preceded by a military band as they made their way to a ceremony at the Victoria Memorial. Captain Leah Williamson's addressed fans on stage outside Buckingham Palace.
There's lots of ways to win a football match, and we repeatedly did it the hard way. But I think that you can see how much we care about playing for England, how much we love it. And, I don't know, 2022 was a fairy tale, but this feels really hard earned, and we're very proud of ourselves, so thank you, and we hope you are too.
Technology Secretary Peter Kyle has told LBC that ministers will use emergency talks to assess what Britain can do in Gaza. Keir Starmer will convene a cabinet meeting this afternoon to discuss a peace and aid plan. He presented the proposals to President Trump in Scotland yesterday. Mr. Kyle says the UK is prepared to do whatever it takes to secure long-term peace.
The crisis in front of us that is so unprecedented and it is so horrific. It's reached terrible levels of deprivation in Gaza. And I think it is right to actually assess what Britain can do both unilaterally by providing aid, but also multilaterally by working with our key global partners to ease the conditions today as much as possible in Gaza.
A 31-year-old man has been arrested in hospital after two men were stabbed to death in South London. Police were called to a business premises in Bermondsey yesterday. A 58-year-old man died at the scene, while a man in his 20s died later in hospital. A row has broken out between Labour and Reform after a cabinet minister accused Nigel Farage of being on the side of extreme pornographers. The party leader has pledged to scrap the government's Online Safety Act over fears that it suppresses freedom of speech. And a hearse carrying Ozzy Osbourne will make its way through Birmingham tomorrow to give fans the opportunity to pay their final respects. The Black Sabbath frontman died last week at the age of 76. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 48 points at 91.30. The pound buys $1.33 and €1.15. LBC weather, mostly cloudy this afternoon with a few spots of light rain, sunny spells and some sharp showers developing in southwest England and south Wales, a high of 22 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Amelia Cox.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Sheila Fogarty.
Hello there. Good afternoon to you. In half an hour's time, we'll be live from Southport. I'll be speaking to Chris Chambers, our reporter, up in the northwest town. It's a year today since those dreadful events in which three little girls were murdered and many others badly injured, and a couple of their teachers badly injured as well, and a man who intervened to try to help them. Many people injured on that dreadful, dreadful day. The families have made it clear for some days now, some weeks even, that they want no big events around it. They want quiet time. They've gone away, we're told. So we will reflect that. Although at three this afternoon, there is a three-minute silence, one for each of the little girls, I imagine, was the thinking behind that. We won't take the full 3 minutes live, but again, we will honour it for a little bit and reflect on it as well. Going to talk about it with Chris in half an hour. And I think an element of the story, obviously, it's first and foremost a desperate human family tragedy. But an element of the story connects very much to the thing we're about to talk about, which is online safety again. So the new laws, the new bill around online safety became active last Friday, last week, the end of last week, and we've been talking about it pretty much every day since, I think. Well, today, something of a sort of a continuation of that debate as to how effective this new legislation is going to be in protecting children online has kicked off again. The Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology, Peter Kyle, who's essentially the minister, the face of the bill, politically speaking, he waded in and criticised those, in particular Nigel Farage, he was alluding to at the time, criticise those who have questions about this bill, the efficacy of it, the reasoning behind it, opposition to it. I think he may live to regret how he went about criticising them. This is what he had to say on Sky News this morning.
I see that Nigel Farage is already saying that he's going to overturn these laws. So, you know, we have people out there who are extreme pornographers, peddling hate, peddling violence. Nigel Farage is on their side. Make no mistake about it, if people like Jimmy Savile were alive today, he'd be perpetrating his crimes online.
And Nigel Farage is saying that he's on their side.
I'm sorry.
Not the side of children who are...
I'm going to ask you to clarify. Do you honestly think to say Nigel Farage is on Jimmy Savile's side?
When it comes to online activity, we have seen unfettered access of adults to children via social media. When we put in the age verification, it stops its strange adults getting in touch with children. So make no mistake.
This is a major leap. You're going to stick to the fact that you said that Nigel Farage is on Jimmy Savile's side.
Nigel Farage is on the side of turning the clock back to the time when strange adults, strangers, can get in touch via messaging apps with children. We have now asked an age verify the age in which people can have access to online content so we can protect children from unwanted, dangerous content and also those messaging services where people can get access directly to it. Nigel Farage wants to turn the clock right back when all of that... Oh, I have absolutely no doubt about it. People are perpetrating more crime online, more danger to children online, and Nigel Farage has said he wants to overturn every single one of the laws that keeps children safe in our country.
Well, in a broadcast from Reform UK's London headquarters this morning, Nigel Farage responded to what Peter Kyle had said.
Well, this is so absolutely disgusting that it's almost beyond belief. Just how low can a Labour government sink in its desperation? Yes, of course, they're in trouble. They're well behind us in the opinion polls. But frankly, to say that I would do anything that would in any way aid and abet people like Jimmy Savile is frankly just... It's so below the belt, it's almost not true.
I mean, Nigel Farage is right, it is below the belt, and I think it was ill-advised what Peter Kyle said. You know, your thoughts on it, very welcome. I think he is right, Peter Kyle, to say that those who don't want to take these actions or any actions are, or they better come up with something else and something better, because otherwise you are saying unfettered access from strangers to your children. That is what you are saying. So to that degree, I think Peter Kyle is right. But there has been criticism, not least from you on the phones since Friday. You as parents doing your level best to keep your children safe online, who wonder about this bill and the degree of efficacy, the degree of use it will be to people like you trying to keep your children safe. And that has got to be a legitimate question to ask about any government bill, but perhaps especially this one, without allegations being levelled at you that you are somehow in league with the devil. Jonathan Hall KC, the UK's independent reviewer of terrorism legislation and state threat legislation, shared his views on LBC on the Online Safety Act.
If you want my honest answer, and I've looked at this topic for a long time now, I think that children have got to stop using social media, full stop. And I think we need to go down the line that Australia has pioneered. I mean, in my dreams, we would just have kids with dumb phones and a few apps. And that would be distributed on the NHS. And if the government was really bold,